Good afternoon. My name is Matthew Sironis, and one of the roles that I have at DVI is to oversee our training and technology program. Because we have a lot of information to share and a short amount of time to be with you today, if you have any questions, please email them to DVI Training and Tech at Delaware.gov. I'll share it again later, but again, it's DVI Training and Tech at Delaware.gov. Please include your contact information and we will get back to you as quickly as possible.
You got to start calling these people, right?
Don't bother with Wanda. Call Verita first.
Yourself.
Beverly. Anyway.
Yeah, I want to call Verita first.
George, this is Milton. You need to mute yourself.
Yeah, mute yourself.
I'll continue when you're ready, guys. Okay. So why are we here today? Well, we were approached by Ms. Verita Turner, who requested that we spend some time with you today to talk about what's new with technology at DVI. One of my colleagues and I spoke with Ms. Turner, and what we agreed on was what we would share with you that is new is how we're providing services to the population that we serve in these trying times of COVID in our lives, as opposed to just talking about updated pieces of equipment or new devices that are on the market. Because this type of service delivery and receipt of services is indeed new in this new normal. So thank you, Verita, if you're on, for inviting us here to be with all of you. Our mission in the Training and Technology Center is to utilize education, outreach, training, and technology in order to strengthen our capacity to help our consumers and the community so that those who are blind and visually impaired may become and or remain employed, independent, and self-sufficient. Our role is to assist visually impaired consumers, students, and adult learners of all ages by determining their technology needs to consume and contribute information and taking the necessary steps to meet them. The goal of teaching the use of the technology is to enable our consumer to apply technology appropriately to complete important educational, vocational, and daily living goals. By serving as advisors and working with third-party tech supports, we help empower consumers and stakeholders to overcome barriers and obstacles that are often encountered in this bewildering world of assistive technology. So our team, I'm very fortunate to have here with me a very talented team, and I'd like to introduce them to you. Malvern Slaughter, trainer educator, currently serving consumers, primarily adults, in all three Delaware counties. Mary Lacey, trainer educator, currently serving clients, K-12 students, in all three Delaware counties. And soon, we will have another trainer educator serving consumers, primarily adults, in the Kent and Sussex counties. And then, of course, there is the most important team member, the consumer. So, serving in new ways. We have had to be creative and utilize new delivery systems of providing information, collecting information, and how to provide direct instruction when we cannot physically be with a person face to face. We're using various tools to provide training and support services that include applications such as Zoom and JAWS Tandem. When we provide remote assistance to our fellow state employees, consumer or not, we utilize applications and tools made available to us by our IT department. They have been very supportive with helping us continue to carry out our mission. And I'm not just referring to us working with our clients, but also providing us with the tools that we need to collaborate with each other remotely. Microsoft Teams is now available for us to add to our toolbox and perhaps replace some of our existing tools. We're very fortunate to have so many different tools for so many different reasons. We continue, we have been continuing to provide services in person, remotely, and a combination of the two. And so far, our results have been quite favorable. Everyone's needs are different, and we want to work with our consumers to develop a very personalized plan to help reach a resolution to a problem. We have a new position. In order to fully complement our service, we added the trainer educator position, currently filled by Mary, within the past year. Mary is not a stranger to DVI. She transitioned to her position as a trainer educator this past February. Prior to this position within our training and tech center, Mary served as a teacher assistant in the DVI's education program. Mary has brought with her a wealth of knowledge of our student population in the birth to 21 age range, including knowledge of our school districts, administration, teachers, and families. Mary joined our team in the Training and Technology Center just as COVID began to change our lives and world.
Zoom text magnifier reader home, Zoom level 8.
She is knowledgeable of the technology used by our teachers of the visually impaired.
7, 6.
And the student population.
4.
To reach their educational goals. She is knowledgeable of the supports needed for IEP teams. She has been researching and learning new equipment so she can continue to do her best in making recommendations and help serve our students and support our TVIs. Mary's background as a paraprofessional, combined with her passion to work with people of all ages, has made her a wonderful addition to our team. She is a perfect fit for our student population and is ready to learn and jump in to help the adult population as well when needed. COVID changed our ability to work face-to-face with students and our DVI teams, but training and education had to continue, whether it be face-to-face or virtually. Mary meets with students remotely using the capabilities of Zoom to provide training of equipment that is new to the student or a feature of the device that is new to the student. Mary has spent numerous hours on the phone or using Zoom technology to teach the students the equipment. And during many of those times, the parents participated in learning some of the essential features and operations of the device. Mary delivers trial equipment to students using safe distancing and practices safe sanitizing techniques. On occasion, Mary would need the parents' input and help, and she found their engagement and assistance to be very helpful and rewarding. So whether it be an assessment, an evaluation, or a lesson of how to use equipment, Mary's reaching her clients in new ways that work for the student. She has been available to our students when needed, who are transitioning from K-12 to college and works with the students and their disability coordinators during their transition. Mary applies methods and techniques of reaching technology skills, of teaching technology skills to blind and visually impaired individuals and other stakeholders. And this can include teachers of the visually impaired, classroom teachers in school districts, and other paraprofessionals. All of these new things that Mary is doing to help DVI's education program is very exciting for us. I look forward to watching Mary's growth within this position. And one more thing, although Mary primarily serves the K-12 population, while Mal primarily serves adults, they work as a team. We want people to be cross-trained in our program. We are very fortunate to have been given the opportunity to expand our team in this way. Now, new locations. Our training and technology center has experienced two relocations within this past year.
Hello?
In Newcastle, our center moved to the area that was previously occupied by the customer service and sales units of the Delaware Industries for the Blind at our Herman Holloway campus. The result? A larger room for technology and a classroom that will serve both in-person and virtual training in the months to come. As far as Southern Delaware, well, as a result of our relocation from Milford to Georgetown, another form of creative service delivery is to have our services more widely accessible to our Kent and Sussex communities. Since our office's relocation to Georgetown last summer, we became aware of people having issues getting to our new location. In response to these concerns, we have developed a partnership with the Delaware Department of Libraries, and we are looking forward to providing services with additional locations. Okay, we will be starting our pilot with the Georgetown Library. So we are excited to be offering this service to you in the upcoming months. So what works and what does not work? Now, as I shared, in this time of COVID, we're providing services remotely and virtually. It's a time where we have had to become more creative than ever before to keep momentum moving along in our teachings, demonstrations, and other forms of consuming and contributing information. Basically, everyone is trying to figure out how to do what we need to do as we face new obstacles every day during this pandemic. And with that being said, we have a question for you. Your input is most important here. After your, the consumer is the most important member of the AT team. And because the unique goals and the desires of each consumer must be considered, as well as his or her expertise and knowledge, we ask you, what different ways can we help you during this time? You know, you can always email or call us if you want to think about it. We're happy to discuss with you one-on-one as well. We understand everyone's needs are different, and hence everyone's plans are different and unique. And therefore, we use different tools. So if you wanted to email us, the email address once again is dvitrainingandtech@delaware.gov. You know, we believe we're on the right track dealing with this new normal, but we believe in learning something new every day. So we ask you, how can we help you. And I opened the to a conversation, or a welcome one.
Hello? This is Robert Patty.
Robert?
Yes, how you doing?
Fine, thank you.
My question is, I am trying to complete my master's degree, and I wanted to know, do you have any tools that can assist me in completing that?
Well, it depends on what those, there's a lot of things to consider with that, but we welcome you to, have you worked with us before in the past?
No.
Okay, so, please send me your, I think we should be able to give some feedback. So if you could, please, or if you want to stay on and I can email you some information, but give us an email with your contact information and we'll be happy to reach out. Maybe we can have a discussion. Okay, so you want your master's degree and you're here in Delaware?
Yes, okay. I was in contact with Pat Morrell.
Oh, okay.
Yes, I can give you my information.
Oh, okay, that's fine. And I'm sorry, now because, again, I'm looking at the screen here and it's like I got three going on here. Your last name again?
Paddy, P-A-D-D-Y.
Okay. I know, Pat, we'll give her a talk and then we can have a conversation. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Absolutely. Anyone else have some suggestions or think how we can help them?
Matt.
Yes, who's this?
This is Daryl.
Daryl Garner?
Yes, sir.
Okay, hi.
During this pandemic situation, mm-hmm. I know when I first started coming into DBI to get computer training, mm-hmm. you guys were using Talk and Type and Teacher. How do you guys deal with that right now? Because most people won't have Talk and Type and Teacher on their computer.
Well, we've got some new tools and methods and procedures and tools to help someone memorize their keyboard. Have you heard of the Bella?
Nope.
Okay, so how about if you and I have a conversation about the Bella? It's a device that helps someone learn and memorize the keyboard that of their choice. We've tried it with several of our keyboards here, the Zoom Text ones, the Keys You See. I've tried it with Dolphin, kindergarten ones. And as you know, when you get a regular Dell computer, for example, one year the keyboard might have this layout and then the next version has a different one. So we've tried it with a lot and it's very successful. And it's got four modes of teaching one how to memorize a keyboard, and it's a pretty simple thing. And you don't need a computer. All you need is your earphones or a set of external speakers, the box and the keyboard. So kids that we know have practiced on their way home from school on the school bus, keyboard in their lap, typing and memorizing that keyboard. I'll be happy to show it to you sometime.
Okay.
Great. So Bella, and I'll send you some information about the Bella. How about that?
Sounds good, sir. Thank you.
Okay.
Yes. This is Carol King Reese. Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Yes. My question is, with platforms like we're using Zoom now and the like, are you planning to move forward with workshops, technology workshops and the like, using these platforms because they are very accessible and mm-hmm. they would be a great platform for teaching technology or other workshops via.
Yes, right.
And even doing a workshop on Zoom would have been great during this time where that's what most people are using. So that's my question. Are you all planning to use technology like this to move forward?
Oh, of course. Just because COVID's here doesn't mean we're using this and we're going to go back to face-to-face. No, this is part of our lives now. And as I mentioned before, our new classroom and tech center here in the Biggs building is much larger. And we have a room that can be divided in half, if you will. It can be a classroom where we will have virtual and live participants there. And when it's not used as a classroom, it can be remolded into holding additional technology out on the floor for demonstration, evaluation, assessment. And we've been teaching kids remotely over the summer. We've had group trainings with the kids. Mary has been involved, Mal, and even myself. And so we've been very creative in providing some demonstrations of equipment, trying to assess somebody to match one, say, video magnifier versus another one. So this is going to be part of our lives. We just have to get just some physical barriers addressed, and it's going to be coming, especially when we start talking about the libraries. You know, that's going to open up a whole new world for us. Anybody else?
Yeah, Matt, this is Verita Turner. How are you?
Hi, Verita.
Hi. With this Bell program that you were talking about, now do you have to, with any one of these now, if you're not open, do you have to open a case?
Wait, are you talking about what I was talking about with Daryl Garner?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh yeah, no. Bella, it's, imagine a small box. The size, maybe like 4 inches by 4 inches, a square box, little cube. And you have a USB keyboard, plug right into it. You can put your headphones in and you can use it right then and there. Or you can use some external speakers. There are
if you haven't used DVI in a while, do you have to open up your case?
Oh, I'm sorry, about a referral.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you know, in the past, remember, we had our rooms open. People could come and use the lab. And it has a different look and a different feel because, you know, as you know, things have changed over the years. And, you know, as more people have had more availability to Wi-Fi devices and mobile things, the way that the lab started out, it's a little different. But if you are currently active with DVI, you have an open case with DVI, okay, then we can get a referral to us. If you are open with somebody else, we can still get a referral open to us.
That's okay, now I have one more question now.
So that we can work with you one-on-one.
Okay.
Okay.
Does that mean like sending it home with somebody? Can you do that?
Well, what we're trying to do is expand some things so that we can have the opportunity. And we're working with other programs to expand our inventory. The one that I have in the training center, I only have two, but we're working to see how we can make things available for trial to see, because you can't always just try it once. If I believe in that. It's a matter of getting resources, and that's something we're still working on. But I understand exactly what you're saying.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. That'll give me a tip to talk to a colleague of mine and see what we can, how we can talk about that. So.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you. Good presentation.
Sure. Yeah. Well, thank you for calling and talking with my colleague and I about this. It was a great idea. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Anybody else? Well, then, okay. If any of you choose to share your questions directly to us, please give us a call, the main number, 255-9800. Ask to speak with either myself or Mary or Malvern. And our email address again, which is a new email address here at DVI, is DVI Training and Tech, one word, at Delaware.gov. And we all have access to that mailbox. So if someone's out, you know, someone else will still be able to cover that.
I just want to know where you got to pick and get help with that class. For the technology class that they talk about. Hello.
Can you repeat your question?
I want to know, where is they're located for the technology class to get help.
Okay. Well, right now, our physical locations, we have our Newcastle facility at the Herman Holloway campus in the Biggs building.
Okay.
We have our other technology center down in the Georgetown office in the Stokely campus.
Okay.
However, that's where it is right now. But because some people have expressed some issues on how to get there, and there have been some obstacles, we're trying to expand some locations. So we've got to get the place set up, and then hopefully people can get there, and then we can have these classes remotely.
Or in person
too. Okay. We're still
all right.
We're still in a matter of building it. And it's been a little difficult trying to build these programs when libraries and things have been closed this summer, you know. So, but we'll get there.
Yeah.
Baby steps, I was told.
All right.
And your name, please?
Beverly.
Beverly?
Hawkins.
Hawkins, you said?
Yeah.
Sorry, my right ear's clogged up, and that's the way the speaker is. Beverly Hawkins?
Yes.
Okay.
Am I muted?
You have a question?
Yeah. Matt.
Sylvia.
Okay. Matt, Sylvia? This is Sylvia Reed.
Okay.
And you may have mentioned this before in your speech, but we've had a little difficulty with people, with getting people called back in, and it's taken us a little while. So I'm gonna ask a big question.
Well,
if somebody needs technological help, and somebody's got a ring thing.
I'm gonna mute Beverly.
If somebody needs technological help,
right,
and doesn't presently have a case open with you guys, and can't leave their house once that happens, because there are a lot of us older folks that can't.
Right.
What's the best? We call you at we call DVI, and what do we say?
I would contact DVI the way you normally would have in the past when you needed our technology services. Okay. People can refer on your behalf, or you could be a self-referral. And you know, you've worked with us before. The thing is, just letting you know that we have been, you know, my trainers during this pandemic back in March, we haven't closed our doors. We've been working the whole time. My trainers work at home, and they work remotely and virtually with the client. How to set up a new equipment, how to use an iPhone, for example, the features on it, how to use JAWS. And it doesn't have to be through JAWS-TAM. There are different tools depending on what you're using and what you're trying to accomplish. So give us a call as you normally would that when you need services, and we'll get that intake process and go from there. And then depending on where we are with this, what resources we have and where to train, we can still do the remote session. And in some cases, we've had to have a person on site. I've been on site, and my trainer was working virtually. So both of us were there together.
Okay. And what happens if you're a Delaware resident and you're presently stuck in a different state?
Well, we've experienced that. And if we can do something that is done virtually, Zoom or something, I say we'd give it a try. I mean, it's just a matter of, it's unfortunate we just can't be face-to-face right now. But tell you what, so you said Delaware resident, but you're just in another state, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, well, I don't see why. Look, we've got, you're in Arizona right now, right? So
that's right.
It's exactly, so if Zoom's working for us talking, we can figure something out how to provide some extra information or training or how to or some, or helping set something up. So Sylvia, I put that down for you.
Yeah.
All right. Are you going to be in Arizona long? Or should I just email you?
Me?
Yeah.
I just emailed you, so you can see it on my my email.
Okay, I've got like 3 monitors here going. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Anybody else? Because I know you have other folks.
Any other questions? Any other questions?
And again, you can call us with the questions too if you don't want to email us. We're happy to take them. And we'll get back to you as quickly as possible. Okay. So,
hello?
Thank you.
Oh. Hello?
Here's a question. Robert has a question.
Yes. This is Robert Patty. Okay. Can you repeat that number to get contact?
Oh, sure. I'll give you our main number. A receptionist will answer, and then they can direct your call to the right person. 302-255-9800.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, now we've got mute. Tell me what.
Okay, well, thank you, Sylvia and Verita and George.
Door prize.
Hello, Matt.
Yes.
My name is Terry. I am not, I don't live in Delaware. I missed part of your presentation trying to come in. What if I don't live in Delaware? Are your services for anybody?
It's, so you're a Delaware resident?
No, I am actually in Montgomery County, Pennsylvania.
Maryland?
Norristown, Pennsylvania.
Oh, well, we serve our Delaware clients, but you know, sometimes I'm going to give you an example how some things can be a little different. We've got people that are in another state, but sometimes they have some business here in Delaware, and I've had to provide some assistance. But tell you what, give me your number. Send me an email or give me your email address, or send us an email, and let's have a conversation after this if you can.
I will attempt to do that. I'm not good with this email, but
okay. Well, if you want
my email, email address is RyderTerry3@gmail.com.
You said Ryder, R as in Robert, I, D as in David, E as in Edward, R as in Robert.
Yes.
Ryder
Terry.
Terry.
TERRI. Number3@gmail.com.
All right. I got to the Terry and I got the Ryder, but I didn't get the number in between. What was the number?
3.
No, all right. So Terry3Ryder@gmail.com.
No, Ryder first.
Okay.
Terry, the number 3.
All right. Got it. It's a little crackly here. Okay. Thank you. We'll have
not
a conversation.
A
great. I'll okay. send you our contact info. We'll have a talk.
Alter, audio now unmuted.
Matt. Hello. It's Sylvia again. Now, as a few business things first, we are getting ready for Accessible Pharmaceuticals, and we co-host Alex Cohen and Alex Luzier.
Yes.
Is there still a Jason Barrett? Because we don't see your name up there. To make you a co-host. Raise your hand.
Shortly. He should be here shortly. He just hasn't signed in yet.
Oh, all right. Okay. Then we will do that, and we will have a door prize. And the door prize is going to be from Gordon Salter. And it is a $25 Amazon card. Hold on just a moment.
You ready?
Yes. Give me the...
Okay, we're going to do the random number generator. Random number generator. Go ahead, Milton.
Random number 45.
All right, hang on a minute. Because, of course, okay, hold on a minute. Please excuse us. Ah, Kenya Thomas, are you on? Is Kenya Thomas there? She's 4394. See if she's okay, still there.
B-E-H-R?
Wait, no, Kenya Thomas. Kenya.
Oh, Kenya. Looking for Kenya. Okay.
Kenya, if you could
raise your hand. Good afternoon. This is Jason.
Kenya's on the screen.
Okay. Kenya, you have just won a $25 Amazon gift card. And we're going to do one more.
Kenya, congratulations.
Thank you.
And we are going to do one more. It is going to be a pair of white NFB brand face masks from Northern Chapter.
Send her a message.
And let's do the number generator for that.
I'm on the.
The number is 36.
36.
Okay, 36. Okay, number 36 is Terry Ryder. You're going to get your face mask.
I'm looking.
Oh, wait a minute. Yes. Face mask. Okay.
That was the one you announced.
Yes, that's right. Terry Ryder. I thought for a second.
Okay,
let's go.
Let's see if Terry Ryder's still here.
She is. I heard her.
Okay.
So we're going to turn it over to Alex Lugier and Alex Cohen, Dr. Alex Cohen, and Jason Barrett for Accessible Pharmaceuticals.
Thank you so much. Dr. Jason Barrett's here. Thank you. Jason's here as well. He's just on one of the phone numbers is his. He's the 267 number. So hi, everybody. Thank you so much for having us here today at your state convention. We're so, so delighted to be here and to be invited here and to share our story with you all and what we do. Once again, I also have two of our co-founders here as well, and they're going to speak with me. We are Accessible Pharmacy. We're a comprehensive healthcare company. We specialize in the blind and low vision community. My name is Alexandra Lugier. I'm the Director of Business Development for the state of Delaware. I live in Dover, Delaware, and I'm originally from Dover, Delaware. I also have with me, this is Alex Cohen. He is one of our co-founders. He's also our Chief Marketing and Accessibility Officer. And then we also have Dr. Jason Barrett. He's one of our co-founders as well, and he's our Chief Medical Officer. So I'm going to hand the presentation over first to Alex, who's going to tell you all about our background story, and then we'll give the reins over to Jason, who's going to dive more deeper into our services, all the things we've got going on, and give you a little bit deeper picture. So please, Alex, go ahead and take it away.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody. I'm delighted to be with you, and we couldn't be prouder that we are licensed and ready to go in the great state of Delaware. So just really excited to be here. So my name is Alex Cohen, and to know the story about Accessible Pharmacy Services, I think it's appropriate that I just share a little bit of my own story. So I started losing my vision when I was a teenager, and I had, for my entire life, really wanted to work in the hospitality industry and be a hotel general manager. And so I went to school to do all that. And as my vision kept deteriorating, I realized that unfortunately I would need to at some point make a career change. And I went to the Pennsylvania OBR BBS, and they helped me go back to school with a new goal of becoming a college professor. And so I went back to school and got my PhD in marketing from Drexel University in Philadelphia with the goal of becoming a marketing professor, which I now am. Now, during my dissertation research, I had all of my research is about how to make a more inclusive marketplace for the blind and low vision community, both in the, you know, online and offline marketplace. And so after years of intensive research, identifying accessibility issues in the online environment and offline environment through field research, realized that there really was not terrific options for the blind and low vision community. Most websites were ridiculously inaccessible. And the experiences of being a blind man trying to traverse a pharmacy were really difficult. Either having, you know, a well-intentioned employee try to assist me in finding the items, or you know, having difficulty using the credit card machine and having the young lady at the pharmacy counter say, what's wrong with you? And I say, I can't see. She's like, oh, you don't look blind. Your face looks nice. I said, what? Well, actually, first I thought, well, thank you. I am handsome. And then I realized, like, wait a minute. What's happening here? And realizing that, you know, go in and ask at the pharmacy counter, so what type of accommodations, what type of amenities do you offer for people who are blind or low vision? And they would give you one of three comments. One is, you know, well, we don't really have anything for you. The second option might be, well, we could print out the label bigger for you. Does that help? And the third, you know, the best option is, hey, I think that we have something somewhere that might read labels to people who can't see. I don't know about that, but I can try and find out about it. And that's usually the best case scenario. And so with these, you know, that being the best, accessible pharmacy services was created with the intention of providing comprehensive medication management assistance for the blind and low vision community, because we feel that there's got to be a better way. And I don't know about you, I was sick and tired of being treated like an afterthought, you know, having something just in case the blind guy from the neighborhood comes in. And I take a number of different medications and vitamins and supplements to try and manage whatever little light sensitivity that I might have left. And it's complicated, you know, and medication management is complicated for everybody. And if you throw in the additional variable of being unable to see, it's even more burdensome. And so most of the pharmacies that I had been dealing with for most of my life, not been accessible or really particularly accommodated. And as you, I strive for independence, and medication management was something that, you know, previously I had to hand off to my wife because trying to read the tiny prescription bottle or put that, you know, refill or reorder number in a smartphone was, it just it was a miserable experience. And I kept thinking, you know, there's got to be a better way. And so coming together with our partners, with Jason Barrett, our co-founder, and our other co-founder who might be here as a guest, Andy Burstein, we developed Accessible Pharmacy Services, which is dedicated to relieving the medication management burden felt by the blind and low vision community, especially in these times. You know, I don't know about you. I feel like it's difficult to socially distance from people. I don't really want to take public transportation or be around people who aren't particularly careful. And also, further to that, I would rather spend time doing things that bring me joy, spending time with my children, running, playing guitar, whatever, anything other than just spending, you know, a few hours wandering around a pharmacy trying to, you know, trying to shop. So we created Accessible Pharmacy Services and have a lot of different features and benefits specifically made for the blind and low vision community. For example, we look at each patient as a unique individual. So when somebody calls into Accessible Pharmacy Services and speaks to one of our customer care representatives, they understand. They understand because we hire people from the blind and low vision community as customer care representatives and as our sales force. So the person on the other line gets it, right? Gets the experience that our patients are going through and understands that not all patients are the same. Some patients are on lots of medications. Some maybe not so many. Some might have different support systems. Some might, you know, be in a different financial or ability status, or some might have other issues such as dexterity issues or maybe certain other physical impairments. So we look at each one of our patients as a unique individual, and we work with them to find out what type of packaging option could work best for them. We offer a variety of different packaging options where we can sort not just medication, but also vitamins and supplements on a hyper-segmented basis, either day by day or throughout different periods of the day. We offer a fairly robust reminder system that will allow us to track and remind our patients when they should be taking their medications. We have a robust education program designed specifically for the blind and low vision community, where the descriptions within our videos are very thorough. Again, being part of the community, I particularly hate educational videos that say, clearly, if you click over here and peel off the red tab or whatever, I'm like, clearly I don't see much of anything, and this is terrible. This is a miserable experience. We have education videos that discuss our different forms of packaging and how to do different things, such as, you know, take your own blood pressure, take somebody else's blood pressure, how to manage your diabetes, how to manage an inhaler or an EpiPen, among others. So, you know, what we do is we realize that trying to make the existing marketplace and more inclusive for us is exhausting. And so we created our own marketplace that's really just for us. So I think you've heard enough of my voice for at least for a few minutes. So I'm going to turn it over to our chief medical officer, Dr. Jason Barrett, who will talk a little bit more about our services and consulting that we offer to our patients.
Thank you, Alex. And thank you all for having us today. This is a real pleasure to be part of your conference. Alex hit on so many of the amazing things that we've hoped to achieve and accomplish. When I got involved in this, I came from the perspective of serving specialty and underserved populations across the broad spectrum. And I will admit that I had very little concept or understanding of the experience of the low vision and blind community, because you really can't understand it unless you're in those shoes. And my connectivity to Alex and so many of you has brought so much clarity and understanding into my own recognition of the need, that it has really been an amazing and rewarding experience. But everything that Alex said is just so important, that we've created an unbelievably accessible environment. But on the other side of that, we simply didn't want to put pills in bottles. So we've applied a number of cutting-edge in-house screening technologies to help in medication management as it pertains to the drug selectivity. From genomic testing that's personalized medication from a patient-to-patient basis, straight through our own artificial intelligence system that rates drugs on their ability to help patients versus create what we call issues with adherence, compliance, and changes in quality of life. So aside from the fact that we've done all of this work to make the environment more accessible, we're also offering a very high clinical footprint as it pertains to experience of our patients. Because as you can imagine, a lot of patients have more than one prescriber. Are those physicians always understanding what the other one is doing? So we provide a continuity event in talking to those prescribers about the patient so they understand all the drugs the patients are on before they add a drug or change something. At the same time, each patient who has multiple medications may have those medications due at different times of the month with different numbers of refills and so on and so forth. So we have a system of active refill management where our systems are always requesting the doctors to back up the prescriptions as they're getting ready to expire so the patient never has a break in coverage. On top of all that, we have a one-to-one system of talking with the patients. We are part of the Be My Eyes platform and will shortly be their primary pharmacy. And we've also enlisted a number of other partners and technologies in the pharmacy space so that not only are you experiencing an accessible environment, but you're getting the highest level of clinical care. In addition, if you're in a Medicare D environment where you're choosing a Medicare D program, we can provide information directly from CMS or the Centers for Medicare Services so that you can choose the appropriate plan that benefits you best according to your drug file, your affordability, and the formulary that covers the medications that you need on a daily basis. We can do this every single year. In fact, this is the open enrollment period right now from October the 15th to December the 7th. We've already met with hundreds of people to help them choose their program. On top of all that, we're creating an environment and a community so that each patient that we touch provides us with an opportunity to learn more about the necessities of everybody. Because the one thing that we know for sure is we don't know what everyone's experience is because we haven't spoken to them. But when we do, we take the information that we gain out of discussing their medication management and their challenges and utilize it to offer other patients more services so that eventually what we're hoping to achieve is a completely accessible space where the patients who are enrolled get better care than they're going to get in any other possible circumstance. Our platform continues to grow and our ability to serve and offer services continues to expand as well. Another thing right now we're getting involved with is offering patients the ability to get tested for COVID-19 at home. An incredibly difficult thing to achieve. So for patients who aren't necessarily feeling ill and need a test right away, we can facilitate a test to be sent to their home, then through Be My Eyes or another telemedicine platform, observe them actually perform the test, and then discuss the results afterwards. And we anticipate that this is a very, I guess what I would call, primary non-pharmacy related service that we're offering. But we're going to continue to expand our abilities into the areas that benefit patients' health from an overall perspective and give them that comfort and that reduction of burden and what we're certain to be the highest level of clinical pharmacy and outcomes-related services that are available. So really, it's three things. It is the accessible environment, it is the high clinical footprint, and it is the community that will continue to expand and build and offer more and more relief and services to patients in this environment. It's been a fantastic experience for me personally, and I know that the patients that we've dealt with so far have seen great benefit and great comfort in the fact that we're here, not in case of, but because of. Thank you.
Thanks, Jason. And I just wanted to stress too that all of these extra services that we're providing, the accessible packaging, the medication management consultation services, as well as the home deliveries, these are all value added and at no extra charge to each of our patients. With all of this said, we would love to open up the floor to any questions that anybody may have.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi, this is Robert Patty. I just have a question. Is this only for private insurance?
No, to be honest, Robert, the majority of our patients are in Medicare, Medicaid, or Medicare-Medicaid combinations. Robert, did you get that?
Yes, sir. Thank you for that answer. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Oh, that one's muted.
This is Daryl. I have a question.
Hi, Daryl. How are you?
Good. Is there a limit on the medication? Because you have some people that might have a quite a few bit of different medications they got going on.
No, Daryl, to be honest with you, the patients that have the larger number of medications are the ones that benefit most by our services. So the packaging and the way that we ship medications and the way that we interact with you and your prescribers, we will help anybody. But those that are particularly challenged because of high quantity of meds are the ones that receive the most benefit.
Good to know.
Yeah.
Yes, this is Carol King-Reese.
Hi, Carol.
Hi. I sat through one of your presentations before, and I have two questions, actually. Number one, can you talk about your packaging advisory board you have, and if that's still an open option for us? And the second question I have is for Dr. Jason to say, what are the quality mechanisms that you all have in place that make sure that, you know, we are getting the medicines we're supposed to get?
Hello?
Great. So yes, we still have our packaging advisory committee. So basically, because we have so many packaging options, we're inviting people to become part of that, and they get a chance to sort of sample our packaging. And we use vitamins or daily supplements to sort of be the, you know, the models for how meds could be delivered. So yes, that's still in place. But specifically in terms of quality, that's a great question. So first and foremost, what we do is a primary medication reconciliation. That's a whole lot of words and a whole lot of syllables. But here's what it really means. We discuss with you where your prescriptions are being filled currently. We ask you who your general practitioner is, as well as any specialist that may be writing for prescriptions. And then we can contact all of them to build your patient profile. Once the profile is built, our clinicians will take a look at the drugs, put it through our screening system, make sure there are no inherent challenges, and then we'll contact you. And if there's anything to discuss with you, in other words, Carol, there's three drugs you're taking right now. Are you aware that two of the three need to be taken without food? And the other one you might want to take closer to your bedtime, just to make sure that you know exactly how you should be taking the medications. Then we'll let you know exactly what we're going to send to you and discuss your packaging options as well, so that you can verify that we actually have all the medications, you understand why you're taking them, and they're arranged in a packaging that best suits your necessity. And that process kind of rotates around itself with every new prescription. So if there's an addition or a change, we put it through the same system of filters, and we discuss with you and your prescribers any inherent considerations or challenges so that you feel confident and so that he understands everything that's happening in your profile.
That's excellent.
Thank you. I'm glad I made that clear, because I know it's a lot. I'm sorry about that. Are there more questions?
Yes. Good afternoon. This is Loretta Turner.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. Oh, good morning. I'm not quite sure I understand how the medicine bottle talk to you, or do you put it in something and it talks to you and tell you what the medicine is?
So in fact, we do work with the Script Talk company, and they provide what is in essence an RFID code attached to the top of the bottle. And then your phone or your smart device can read that, and it will talk to you. So that is an option. But we also have packaging options that would arrange the medications in a way that are also easy to understand and easy to follow without the speaking bottles. So really, what you're tapping in on is our menu or our series of options, because what we want to do is make sure that you're comfortable. So it's really your choice. If you'd like the Script Talk platform, we're happy to bring it to you. If you'd rather have your medications in a disposable med planner, we can do that. Or we can even put them in vials, and the vials can come with larger print or a flag label that can be read by our app. So we do actually have our own application on the smartphone that will read your labels as well. So there's actually a number of options for you. And if you like, you can try one out, and if you don't like it, we'll have you to change it to another one. So really, it's a menu. You find what fits best for you. We have no problem changing it if it's something that you want to adjust at any time.
Thank you.
Are you familiar with Script Talk? Are you familiar with
Script Talk? No.
Okay, Script Talk is a manufacturer of a platform that will allow you know, the bottles to be labeled with an RFID code, and they will in fact read, or it can be read and spoken to you. And that is something that we support.
Oh, okay. And it tells you like what, how many times you take it and
exactly.
All that good stuff. Oh, okay.
Exactly. Or we can put them in a disposable med planner that you could simply, you know, you can easily detect with your hands morning, noon, evening, and bedtime. And we can explain all of that to you in greater detail if you were to become a patient.
Hey, so I have another question. I'm sorry. How often, because I get, you know, like a 90-day supply. How would you do that then in the disposable container? And I take them every day.
So we would ship you a medication, disposable medication packs. Each of those holds 7 days worth of medication in 4 intervals. And we would send you as many packs as you'd like in accordance with what your insurance company will pay for.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Like less, you can get less? Sure, not at all.
This is Katrina. How can we get, I'm not sure if I missed it, but how can we get enrolled in the program?
So you can go to our website, or you can call our number. Or if you'd like, we can talk to you at the end of the phone, at the end of the conference, and get your information and have one of our care coordinators call you.
Okay, which would be easy? What's your phone number?
I'm so sorry. 215-799. I'm sorry, Alex, can you give her the rest of the phone number? My phone is breaking up.
Absolutely. It's 215-799-9900. And I just call that number and just speak to someone about getting enrolled. Yep, absolutely. You can also visit our website, which is www.accessiblepharmacy.com. And our phone number is listed there as well.
And I'm so sorry.
Sorry. Okay, one more question.
Go ahead, Alex. I just got out of my bad cell. I'm so sorry.
That's okay. Katrina, go ahead with your next question. So my mom's kidney patient, dialysis and all of that, and she's diabetic and she's losing her vision, but she is not officially diagnosed as visually impaired. Can she apply for this, or does she have to be visually impaired?
No, 100%. In fact, she's the kind of patient, to be frank, that we can really have a tremendous, tremendous benefit to, because while she's in this circumstance, we can begin to help her so that if there's anything that can be done right now to support her, we're here for her. We can introduce a number of different clinical measures as well as packaging features so that while she has some sight, her transition will be much easier. And maybe even, you know, if there's a possibility to extend her vision longer, we'd be happy to look at that and try and help that way.
Okay, because I was asking for her too, because I know that I've given her like the pill containers and stuff, but because all of her medications is the same, she couldn't do that, so she opens her bottles all the time, but also she can't open the bottles because of her hand, and then she can't read the bottles, so that's why I was asking, because she has literally like 35 medications. So I'm glad Daryl did ask that question about the amount of meds. So I just wanted to know if you had to be visually or blind, or if patients in that situation.
No, she's exactly the kind of patient that would benefit most from our services because of the organization of the medications, because I'm going to bet that she has multiple prescribers. I'm also going to bet that her drugs are due at several different times during the month, and that becomes a burden also.
Yep.
I'm going to bet that there are times when she has 2 refills on one and 0 on another.
Yep.
All of these things become our responsibility. All of these things, as they pertain to her, duty lists go away. So whether she has some sight, no sight, or you know, in this particular disposition, she's exactly the person that would benefit most by what we're doing.
And you said that you can do the mail as well?
Yeah, we'll deliver the prescriptions right to her doorstep. It's more of a concierge distribution. Where is she? Where is she? She's in Delaware?
She's in New York, but I know, like, even, she just came out of the hospital on Sunday, and she couldn't even get any medications filled until Wednesday.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. So theoretically, if she's discharged on a Sunday, we would get her medication filed that day. It would get to her sometime late on Monday.
Yeah, because even she had to do emergency dialysis, so she's on it, and she couldn't even get the meds. It's crazy.
Does she have the a supply of the SDS liquid at home? What they use in case you can't get to dialysis?
Not yet. She's still doing training because they had to do an emergency in the hospital. She wasn't able to get trained, so she's doing training, and then everything is supposed to be sent home. But do you guys also help with helping them know the times to take stuff? Because that's her other issue. And my 100%. Issue, too, is with my meds, it's like, 100%. What's good to take it and stuff.
100%. That's part of the reconciliation, so that when we get the medication file, inherently, especially for patients with difficult regimens, your mom's one of them, it needs to be balanced in a way that she's not taking a medication that would contraindicate or, you know, interact with another one in the same interval. Also, we're trying to minimize the number of pills at any given moment you would take, because nobody wants to swallow 35 pills in the morning.
Yeah.
That's a challenge for anybody, let alone patients who have dexterity issues. And we do provide some resources and devices that'll help her open her packs, that'll help her to understand her packs. And we'll provide a one-for-one also. She can engage us directly with telemedicine or use the Be My Eyes application as well.
Okay, sounds good. And for myself, I can do the same.
Well, I don't know about you, but we like your mom.
Hey!
Just kidding. We'd love to have both of you. In fact, if we had both of you, you could be support for each other. And that's the kind of thing we're trying to achieve, right? That's the community aspect of this. So that would be lovely to have both of you.
The medication times and stuff. And yeah, I'm not good at that either. So with her, especially 35 medication and being visually impaired, I couldn't write everything down and try to make a chart for her. So it's like, so I'm glad that I attended this so I get the resource. But yeah, I will be giving you guys a call soon. Thank you.
And let me let you know a little secret. I've been a pharmacist for 31 years. I take 3 medications a day, and it's not that easy for me. So, you know, I really benefit by what we do as well. So trust me, it doesn't really matter who you are. You know, if it's trouble and you're concerned, we can certainly help.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Anna Trotman, is this program available in other states? Because I'm in Alabama.
So right now we are licensed in, I'd say, about a third to half the states in the country. We have applied for licensure everywhere, but we'd encourage everyone to give us a call. We'll let you know if we're licensed in the state that you live in currently, and then we'll let you know if we're not, exactly when. I believe Alabama's on border. It's very close. But just to be totally honest, we applied for licensure as the beginning of the pandemic started, and a lot of states are a little slower with things like licensure. But right now, the majority of the eastern seaboard of the United States, from Florida straight up to Massachusetts, is covered. I think Alabama is in there, but I don't want to say because, unfortunately, I'm not in my office. But I'm pretty certain it'll be soon, if not right away. We'd love to have you.
Because I'm a kidney transplant patient, I take about 5 medications a day. So, yes.
Sure. Makes total sense.
Yes.
Makes total sense. Absolutely.
This is Verita Turner again.
Yes.
Do you do insulin also?
Certainly. Certainly. Any kind of insulin in terms of pens, vials, needle tips, all the support systems, the testing supplies around insulin as well. It's all part of our service package. And we offer the same kind of refill system. All of the insulin goes out in cold chain technology to make sure that it's kept well and protected. And then we monitor it the same way we do the regular oral medications to be sure that before you're due or you run out, we make sure the doctors get us refills.
Okay, and you said this doesn't cost anything.
There's no cost for anything outside of the pills or medications themselves. Our clinical work, our packaging, and the education that we provide is all part of becoming part of the community.
There's no extra charges.
Okay.
Hello?
Hello.
This is Robert Patty again.
Yes, Robert.
You were talking about the cost of a Medicare patient. How much is the cost to join this organization?
There's no cost to join. We're just happy to have you.
So when I order for my medication, is there a cost?
You're paying for the cost of the copays and the vitamins or whatever it is themselves. There's nothing extra besides what your insurance requires you to pay.
Okay, thank you again.
You're welcome.
A quick question. This is Katrina again. Your insulin, do you have any adaptive on that? Or, like, is it speech-enabled or no, the insulin pens? Like, for me, I have to have somebody with me to get my right dosage.
So I'm not sure if the ScriptTalk application would be the perfect measure for that, but we could provide you some insulin pen training via Be My Eyes.
Okay.
So you don't know how to digitalize the pen and turn the knob to,
I know how to do that, and I count the clicks, but sometimes if I'm not sure, I have to have somebody sighted with me because my doctor said every click is 2 units, but then when we did it at home, it's each click for 1 unit, so he was totally wrong.
So I'm going to apologize for your doctor right now, but I'm going to also say that I've been a certified diabetes educator at different times in my life. And I don't want to make any excuses, but for some god-awful reason, every insulin manufacturer has made this be a little bit different. So what we would do for you, once we understand which insulin you're using, is we would try to educate you as to the number of clicks and how the measures are done and so on and so forth. But we could also watch you via Be My Eyes.
Okay.
And sort of train you and get used to it. So we want to empower you to do this on your own. You don't want to rely on people forever, but if you need to, we're here for you also. Yeah, I mean, come on. I always say it this way. My friends that are in low vision and are blind can crush me with hearing and feeling all day long. I can't do half the things they can do. So once you become good at it, you know, you're going to be helping the sighted people.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Guys, ladies and gentlemen, yes, it is now 2:10 and we have to switch because there have been so many good questions that it's our 2:00 presenter, thank you, Ms. Felton, for being patient, has had to wait. And so what I think we're going to do is we're going to let Ms. Felton speak for an extra 10 minutes. We're going to make sure that she gets her extra 10 minutes. Thank you very much. Kat, take it away for thanking our presenters.
So without further ado, I would like to announce Maggie Felton. She is coming to us from, she's a representative from Vanda Pharmaceuticals. And she is going to speak about the non-24 disorder and what it's all about and treatment options for it. Maggie, take it away.
Thank you, everyone. And I can certainly make this in 20 minutes. I've enjoyed the conversation. I've learned a whole lot. There's a lot of things about the pharmacy challenges that I wasn't really aware of. So I truly appreciate it. All the questions, I've learned so much from it. So I'm going to share this information with others as I move forward. So I am a nurse by profession, a nurse for decades, now nurse practitioner. So I am certainly in a position to share this with others. But I'm going to switch gears a little bit and just talk to you guys a little bit about a sleep disorder. My goal today really is you know, to talk to some of you who might have not heard a presentation about 924. And at the end of the day, I just hope to give you a little bit of insight into where you can get some information about 924. You know, if you think you have the symptoms, what to do about it, where you go next, what's the next step. And so I will be happy to provide my information that will be, which could be your stepping stone into the next process into this. But what to do, so I wanted to go ahead and jump into the 924. I'm sure many of you have heard of this condition, and 924, and that's NON24, which is a sleep disorder, or rather a circadian rhythm disorder that affects so many of us in the community. And the reason is it is a disorder that affects many of those who are totally blind. It's very prevalent in those individuals who are totally blind, but it's not exclusive to those who are totally blind. It truly could affect anyone. Even sighted individuals could have this disorder, NON24. And the reason why we keep talking about it, because awareness is still very low, even though within our community here, some of us might have learned about this little here and there, probably seen a commercial. But in reality is that in the clinical community, it's still a very rare disorder, and many doctors have never even heard of it, don't know much about it. So if any of you have any sleep troubles, and you what you do is what everyone does, you go to your primary care doctor, maybe your nurse practitioner, and you tell them that you have sleep troubles, the first thing that they consider within their scope of practice is, you know, what typically they treat. Because the symptoms are so similar to other sleep disorders, they may not even ever consider 924 because it's so similar to things like insomnia, you know, a lot of stress and anxiety, sleep disorders, you know, sleep apnea, even narcolepsy, shift disorders. So symptoms mimic all these other diagnoses. So we empower you to be knowledgeable about this, especially if you think you have this concern and you want to talk to your doctor about it. We want you to be empowered enough to mention it to your doctor. And doesn't mean that you have it. It's simply you want your doctor to be aware that this is very prevalent in your community, and therefore they should be able to consider it in the differential. So NON24 sleep disorder, it is a circadian rhythm disorder. And the reason why this is very prevalent in totally blind individuals, it because it has to do with light perception. So those who do not have light perception are very much affected by it. But it's not, again, exclusive to those who are totally blind. As I said, anyone can be affected by this, even sighted individual. Couple of important things about it. It is a serious chronic condition. It's not something comes and goes. It's not like a flu. If you have it, you deal with it for life. Most often individuals note they have this disorder shortly after they lose their eyesight. If for those individuals who have lost their eyesight as a child, or maybe you were born with this, many of them unfortunately battle with this throughout their lifetime and not really realizing this is NON24. And the reason is, you know, we've only known this to be a condition for about 80 years or so, 60 years when they've done studies on it. So it's fairly new in the clinical community. But, you know, circadian rhythm has been around for quite some time. And I apologize, Zoom meeting. I have a little puppy that's just squealing to come in. So it's fairly new when we talk about clinical community. A second important thing about this, that it comes with symptoms. Some people may be heavily influenced by this. Some people may just have milder symptoms. So it also depends on that. the main classic symptoms is nighttime sleep impairment. So, and I don't mean just not being able to sleep at nighttime, but those who have this will tell you that they'll find themselves doing all sorts of things at nighttime, you know, laundry, vacuuming, doing dishes, paying bills. You know, you lay down, you're fully alert, your eyes will just keep opening, your mind is going places. It's just really, really hard, if not impossible, to go to sleep. And the reason is, you know, your body's in confused circadian rhythm, and as a result, it's producing different hormones at the wrong time. So in the night, as you're trying to sleep, you should be making melatonin. Melatonin is designed to help you fall asleep, makes you sleepy. But when the circadian rhythm is confused, it's producing something called cortisol, and cortisol is that fight and flight hormone. It's there first thing in the morning to get your day going, get you started, get you active, alert, and awake. And so when you start producing cortisol, when you're laying down to go into sleep, it is very, very difficult to do so because you're fighting biology, you're fighting your own body. So you're putting yourself on a schedule, you know, maybe you're doing good sleep hygiene, you know, maybe you're, you know, taking baths and maybe drinking some tea. Some people love to drink warm milk, you know, to kind of help induce some of that melatonin. So people do all sorts of things, but if your body is producing cortisol, it's really, really difficult to fight that. And, you know, I'm sure some of you remember from biology class, cortisol is like that fight and flight response. It's when you get chased by a lion, it kind of kicks in, you make so much of it. So it is that hormone that really keeps you awake. And the second part of this, you're sleepy during the day, and it's not just sleepy. It's really impairs your function, impairs your activity to the point that it really affects your quality of life. So that makes it really difficult, you know, when you have work or responsibilities and things like that, very, very difficult. So, and also this is circadian rhythm, non-24 is very different from other sleep disorders. And it's hard to recognize the difference because there aren't excellent tests for these. There are not very good tests. There isn't a single test that says yes or no, you have it, you don't have it. You know, just like insomnia, you know, insomnia is difficulty going to sleep to bed in the evening, but it's more predictable. It's usually around the same time every night, and it could be induced by anxiety, could be induced medication, could be from habits, could be a variety of things, stress. But non-24 has a more of a cyclic period where people who have it will tell you that their sleep is like a roller coaster. It comes and goes. Sometimes they're sleepy at midnight, sometimes it's 3 in the afternoon, sometimes it's 6. It feels like it's all over the place. There's a reason behind it. There's a clock that the circadian rhythm goes by. That's your own natural clock, and it that produces these hormones. So it's very, very confused. And it's also very different from things like sleep apnea. Sleep apnea is a breathing disorder. If you have it, you know, you're probably aware of CPAP, and you know, your partner probably tells you snore. So it's more of a breathing disorder as you lay down. And it's also very different from shift work disorder, you know, shift work disorder, an ability to stay awake or an ability to fall asleep. But the difference is with shift work disorder, the disorder actually goes away when someone changes their job or changes the habit. So also has some additional differences. But, you know, all these sleep disorders have very, very similar symptoms. So it's can be very difficult to figure out what's happening, you know, what with you. And so what the next step, you know, if you feel like you may have some sleep issues, if first of all, if you are totally blind, you have no light perception and you have sleep issues, it's a very, very high suspicion that you have NON24. And again, it's because it has to do with that light perception. Our eyes have these special cells and they're able to detect light. So every morning as the sun goes up, the eyes are able to detect light and almost reset everybody's clock to be the same on this equal 24-hour plane. But we're all different, and all of our clocks are a little bit different naturally by nature. And so nature designed this clock to have us reset every single day. And it's done in plants and animals and every living organism. And it's done for a reason, to keep us healthy. But if you're not able to reset every day, you have this clock that just kind of runs on its own, that it's not a 24-hour, could be 24 hours and 30 minutes. And I'll use a quick example, and I'll use Cat as an example. Let's say Cat has 24, non-24, and let's say Cat were to go to bed tonight at 10 p.m. And tonight may be beginning of her cycle, so you may go to bed just fine, not a problem. But because tomorrow you don't get the reset when the sun goes up, when you go to bed tomorrow night, your body will tell you, well, my natural clock is 30 minutes later. So your body will tell you to go to bed at 10:30 p.m. The next night, 11 p.m. The next night, 11:30 p.m. Next night, it's midnight, and so on and so on. Well, before you know it, you know, your day turns into night, and night turns into day. And so your body is making these hormones and the wrong time of the day, which we all live in, and so on. That's why so many people feel sometimes they're sleepy, you know, at midnight, sometimes they're sleepy at 3 p.m, sometimes it's 6 p.m. And it's because it depends where they are in their clock, in their cycle. So again, it's one of those disorders that circadian rhythm has been around for a long time, but in the clinical community, it's still considered a very rare disorder and not as recognized. So I empower anyone here to educate yourself on this. And I do have to say, I work for Vanda, and they have the most talented, knowledgeable health educators for anyone who, you know, wants to dive into, or maybe kind of consider, you know, do I have sleep disorder, sleep issues? Could this be NON24? Could this be something else? Please connect with me. I'll be more than happy to give you resources to talk to someone. Is this something that maybe you should pursue or not? We also love to educate clinicians. So we go out to the clinical community, send them information on NON24, just to bring the awareness from their perspective. So when they see someone that's visually impaired, they're able to consider that within their scope of practice. And so, and of course, there are treatments and considerations. Not everyone is necessary, needs to take a treatment. There's a lot of people that do a variety of things to help them try to control their circadian rhythm. It can be challenging depending how strong your symptoms are. Some people are more successful than others. And so there's lots of stories that I could tell you about. You know, I hear all the time about patients who go through a number of different doctors for their sleep issues before they actually get to the proper diagnosis, and they go through different tests and medication treatment and so on without really a good success. So I encourage anyone here to please educate yourself and consider educating those around you as well, as this is really our goal. Now, I want to go ahead and just give out my phone number for anyone who would love to learn more outside of this short window, or maybe discuss symptoms or have any concerns or specific questions. And after my phone number, I'm going to go ahead and open up for questions. So my name is Maggie, and my telephone number is 202-579-8035. And if anyone here would like to share something, I think we just have a few minutes, or ask a question, I encourage you to do so. Thank you.
Hello, Maggie. My name is Terry.
Hi, Terry.
I am pretty sure, because I'm totally blind, that I do have it. But what happened, like, I used to do, like, Tylenol PM because everybody said it would help you sleep. Mm-hmm. I did melatonin, and all those things did was keep me awake. Can that be part of 924?
Well, you know, what I say to you on that one is everyone responds differently to things like vitamins or nutraceuticals, or, you know, things like, I call them grandma treatments, where you drink, you know, warm milk in hopes to make melatonin. But I can tell you that, you know, what people do notice is some of the treatments may work. Like, a lot of people do take Tylenol PM, or they'll go to Benadryl, or they'll take the melatonin. And sometimes some of these things may work initially for a short time, and then they just stop, you know. And that's something that you have to consider, is a tolerance. Is this just not a effective treatment for something that I have? And the fact that you're not responding at all to any of those could be non-24 if you combine it with your symptoms, but it could be just that you're not responsive. And it also depends how severe your symptoms are.
Okay.
That was a great question.
Hello, Maggie.
Yes, Dennis.
Yeah, this is Dennis. Do you have, when someone calls in, do you have a process to kind of put them through to identify whether this is, you know, likelihood of non-24 versus, you know, everything else on the planet that can keep people awake?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a very, very experienced health educators that will kind of talk through your specific symptoms. And, you know, sleep disorders are complex. So, you know, it's a more of a longer conversation than here, you know, we would be able to do. But they go over through your symptoms and maybe, you know, what medication are you on that could possibly be causing this. And there's a whole questionnaire just to kind of get you started. You know, could this be something else, or maybe not even close? You know, maybe this isn't something that you're, maybe you really have sleep apnea. You know, maybe, you know, you identify snoring as one of your symptoms. So we do definitely have a questionnaire and a process to help recognize what would be the next best step for you personally. And they have a lot of experience in that. They're very, very good. And everything, of course, is confidential. And everything, of course, is based on your input. So if you say, yes, I want to do a questionnaire, or no, I think this is enough information for me. Obviously, everything is driven by you. So nothing is delegated. Once you get to a process and run through, essentially it's based on what you want to do next, but it is a step process.
Right. I mean, if this is a light perception issue primarily, how do sighted people end up with non-24?
Yeah, that's a great question. So it is a light perception issue. As I said, our eyes have these specialized cells that are responsible for detecting light. And so what happens is, once the cells detect light, they send messages through a complex system back to the brain to let the brain know, say, hey, there's light, you know, and the brain decides what to do with this information. Well, unfortunately, for some people who have low vision or even sighted individuals, they may still be able to detect that light, but the message may not actually get to the brain for various reasons. It could be from trauma, could be from other disease concept. It could be, you know, something chronic that's going on within the brain, could be medication induced, could be some other reasons. But it's just not as common as it is in those who do not have any light perception, but it definitely happens in everybody else as well. Great question.
Thank you. Thank you, Maggie. You've been very, very, very helpful. I'm glad you could come and present to us today.
Thank you, Dennis.
Hi, Maggie. My name is Eric. I'm a sighted volunteer with the NFP.
Hi, Eric.
I don't have any experience or questions with non-24, but I just wanted to share with you that when I was looking for opportunities to volunteer for organizations that are, I would call underserved. The commercials for non-24 is what drew me to find the NFB and brought me here to this day.
Oh, thank you, Eric. Thank you for sharing that. That's really glad to hear. I'm so happy to hear that. Thank you. And thank you for volunteering. Your work is very well recognized, and we appreciate that very much. Thank you. Okay, Kat, it looks like there may be no more questions, and I think I hope I ended right on time for you to get back to the right schedule. I appreciate this. Thank you, everyone. And again, feel free to reach out if you'd like more information. I'm sure you can also get my information from the website and from Kat as well. But I'm available via phone for anyone who's looking to find out more. Thank you.
Thanks, Maggie. Your presentation was very informative. And yes, I will be definitely in touch if anyone has more questions off list or off convention, or I don't know how you say that, politically correct, in a Zoom convention, because we're not on an email list, we're in a Zoom room. So off the Zoom room, I guess, would be politically correct.
Yeah.
Is our 310 to 340 presenter in the room? And yes, to answer that question, she is.
So is your 2:30 to 3 o'clock.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. So with that said, sorry, I totally skipped that. So yes, 2 o'clock to 2:30. No, sorry. 2:30 to 3 o'clock. Sorry, it's been a long day.
Michael's in the room. Michael is in the room.
Yes, he is in the room. And he is going to speak about accessible science. I'm probably butchering his presentation because I don't exactly know what company he worked for. So before I butcher it anymore, I'm going to turn it over to Michael Hinkson. Michael, take it away.
Thank you. Thanks, Kat. I have never spoken right after Maggie has spoken, but I really love the opportunity. It's a great lead-in for some of the things I want to talk about. And so let me start by asking all of you some questions. We'll make it rhetorical for the moment. We may come back to some of this, but why is it that somebody was able to even discover non-24 and develop medications to help? Or if we want to come up with simpler things, why is it that if you have butter at room temperature and you put it in your refrigerator, it gets hard? Or why does Jell-O become more solid when you put it in the refrigerator? Why is it that Coke and other cola and some non-cola products fizz when you pour them into a glass? What is carbonation all about? All relevant questions that science has answered. And traditionally, we have not, as blind people, been able to participate in a lot of that science, which is why I'm here today. As Kat said, I'm Michael Hinkson. Probably many of you have heard of me because I worked in the World Trade Center on September 11th, 2001, and escaped with my guide dog, Roselle. And not only live to tell the story, but for the past 19 years, I have been a keynote public speaker talking about teamwork and trust, the lessons to be learned from September 11th, and talking about some of my life history, including the fact that I went to the University of California at Irvine in Southern California, where we had some fires this week, unfortunately, but the university is fine and most people are getting back to normal. And I obtained a master's degree in physics. Now, it was a little bit more of a challenge than it should have been to get a master's degree in physics. And although I went on to do some scientific work working for Dr. Ray Kurzweil and the National Federation of the Blind on the original development of the Kurzweil reading machine, due to other circumstances, I ended up going into sales. But even while in sales and not directly in the science field, I worked in the high-tech industry. And also, because of my training in science, I think I was a better person to be in the sales environment and to undertaking sales efforts than I would have been without that. And I'll get back to that in a moment. But the point is that I was able to get the master's degree, even though I could not participate in physics lab experiments. I could not directly be involved in doing the things that my sighted student colleagues were able to do. And the main reason that I couldn't, well, there were two, but the main reason that is most obvious is that the equipment was not accessible. It wasn't possible for me to read temperature gauges, read Geiger counters, to measure the pH or the amount of acidity or base content of a solution, and do a lot of the other things that students could do who could see the stuff. So I had to kind of sit back and be the reader and maybe a note taker, but I didn't get to participate in that stuff. And I think that unfortunately was a little bit of a loss because I didn't get some of the same experiences that they did. So for me, even in experimental physics, it was more theoretical than it was actually physical because I couldn't do the experiments. We have undergone some changes in our society regarding that. And that's kind of one of the reasons I'm here. I was asked earlier this year by the founder of a company called Independence Science, so the word independence and then the word science, to kind of come on and help consult and market and talk about the product that Independence Science has developed. The product that they developed is actually something that was co-created with a company called Vernier Software Technologies. It's called the LabQuest. The LabQuest is a box, and I'm not going to have enough time to really demonstrate it today. And I want to talk more about concepts and give you all a chance to ask questions. So we'll not do an experiment today directly. The LabQuest is a box, and it's the LabQuest 2 today. The box has some ports or connectors on it into which you can attach a variety of devices, typically on a cable. There are like 80 different kinds of probes. There is everything from a probe to measure temperature, to a probe to measure magnetic field strength, a probe to measure voltage accurately and extremely accurately, to measure current, and even one to measure pH, which I talked about earlier. Most sighted people typically measure the pH content or the acidity content by dipping a piece of paper called litmus paper into a solution and watching for the color change. Okay, that gives you a fairly decent idea of what the pH is, but it doesn't give you an accurate idea and an accurate solution to what the pH of any solution is. On the other hand, with the LabQuest device attaching the right probe and sticking it into the solution, you can get the absolute value of pH at any given time. One of the experiments that I like to do is to take two airborne tablets, you know, Airborne, the cold product that helps keep colds away, so they say, I think it does. That's a different story. But take two airborne tablets and get a glass of water or a cup of water. And what I do for an experiment oftentimes is to take two different probes that I connect into the LabQuest at the same time. One measures the temperature of the water in this case, and the other will measure the pH. And I stick the two probes into the water, and the LabQuest talks. It tells me exactly what the probes see, which is really pretty cool. So when I put the probes into the water, typically the temperature of the water is somewhere around 75 degrees Fahrenheit, and the pH of the water by the time everything settles is about 6.3. We won't worry about what all that means. That means, though, it's fairly close to being neutral between the amount of acid content or the amount of base content of the water. So don't worry about the chemistry right now, just accept the numbers. Then I drop the two airborne tablets in, and several things happen. First thing that happens is, as you're listening to the LabQuest, the temperature of the water goes down. The second thing that happens is the pH level of the water goes down. And typically in the experiments that I've done, by the time we're completed, the temperature of the water is somewhere between 72.5 and 72.9 degrees instead of 75. And the pH content or the pH measurement of the water drops from 6.3 to 4.8, which means that the airborne tablets are actually introducing a little bit more acid content into the water. The more fun thing, though, is why does the temperature of the water go down? Again, a scientific question and something that I should be able to participate in studying. And now with the Talking Lab Quest, I and any other blind student who wants to be involved or in any way partake of science, or people who want to work in the scientific fields who need to make measurements relating to different kinds of things, can do so using the Talking Lab Quest. And that is pretty cool. And I think that it's important that now we have the opportunity to take advantage of those things, which we could not do before. There's another problem, though, that I somewhat faced when I was going to college, and which is the more potentially prevalent problem today, and that's attitudes. When I was getting my master's degree, I had occasion to have the opportunity to look at my student file. And in the file, there was a letter from one of the professors in the physics department where I was studying. Fortunately, it was not a person who I ever had as a professor. But the letter said, and it was there in the file for the world to see if they looked at the file, no blind person could ever absorb the material to get to attain an advanced degree in physics. No blind person could absorb the information and the material necessary to get an advanced degree. So is this person saying that because a person is blind, their brain changes so much that they can't do it, or just that they can't see it? Either way, the attitude is bogus, it's wrong, and is totally inappropriate. But we still see it today. We see it all too often in everything that we do, science or otherwise. But in the world of science especially, it's a problem, because I always thought that scientists were supposed to be open-minded. Well, we know that that's not necessarily the case. There are any number of examples of where science has limited in some ways some of our thinking and shouldn't. And other people do too, because scientists are, after all, human, and they're victims of the same world and the same society in which we live. Quick illustration of that, no blind person until the mid-1980s, and no, I think, person with a physical disability could buy life insurance simply because we couldn't see. It took Jim Ombig of the National Federation of the Blind challenging insurance companies by saying to someone, now you guys do scientific modeling of everything that you do, and every decision that you make is based on science, right? And this particular person said yes. And Mr. Omvig continued by saying, well, you guys all say that blind people can't get life insurance because we're a higher risk than sighted people. And you've clearly made that determination based on scientific data, right? And this person said back to Mr. Omvig, well, yes, obviously that's the case. Mr. Omvig then said, would you please show us that data? And the guy said, sure. 6 months went by and no data ever appeared. And as it turns out, no data ever appeared because the scientific people didn't have it. It wasn't there. There was no such animal that said that blind people were a higher risk. But the scientists said we were. It was based on prejudice. Science and scientists need to keep an open mind. By the way, we can get insurance today because the National Federation of the Blind led a team effort of a number of disabilities groups, and we were major proponents of getting every state to pass a law that said that no insurance company could discriminate and deny life insurance to any person who was blind or had a physical disability unless they could demonstrate through actuarial statistics and evidentiary data, insurance terms, that blind people were a higher risk. But the science originally, all through prejudice, said that we were a risk. It's necessary for scientists to keep an open mind, and it is something that anytime any blind student who wants to participate in science runs into, anytime that any student encounters someone who says, well, but you're blind, you can't participate in those experiments, the answer to that is, how do you know? Where is your proof? Where is the evidence? Have you ever tried blindness? I got a call from someone last week from a school on the East Coast who has a student who wants to participate in science, but the problem is that the school has said this person cannot participate in any lab experiment unless there is someone specifically in the room with them. That's just wrong. If the student doesn't succeed, the student doesn't succeed. Now, it is true that the student needs to learn some things and hasn't probably had the opportunity to learn some of the techniques and the procedures that their sighted colleagues have learned. And that's the fault of the school district. But to say that we must be monitored, to say that we can't participate without being monitored, is as wrong as any scientist saying no blind person could ever possibly absorb the information and material necessary to get an advanced degree in physics. That's the real attitude that we face today. Independent science is as much promoting the concept of blind people being able to work in the scientific field as it is a company that is saying that we can help by providing the technology to allow you to participate in laboratory experiments. If you visit www.independencescience.com, you can learn more about some of what they're doing. And you're also welcome to contact me if you'd like to talk about any of this. I'm easy to get on email. It's mike@michaelhingson.com. That's mike@michaelhingson.com. And I'd love to answer any questions with regard to independent science and the talking lab quests and all that sort of stuff. I will always respond to emails, and it'll probably end up being that we will have a chat about it on the phone or on a Zoom call, but I would love to do that. But the bottom line is, blind people can participate in science. STEM2U, the program of the National Federation of the Blind, proves it every time the program occurs. The EQ program that the Federation has set up again demonstrates it. Blind people have worked to build sounding rockets and launch them from NASA Wallops in Virginia. There's so many things that we've done. Science is what led to the development of the vehicle technology President Rick Abono used to drive an automobile around the Daytona Speedway right before the Rolex 24 race in 2011. And I was there when that happened. If you've never seen the video of Mark driving the car, you ought to watch it. It's at www.blinddriverchallenge.org. It's really cool. And you can see firsthand President Rick Abono, before he was president, driving a car around the Rolex 20 or around the Daytona Speedway, avoiding obstacles and doing a number of things that people would say no blind person could do. And he didn't have anybody telling him what to do. It was a totally independent thing. It all came about from science and from the National Federation of the Blind working with universities and companies to develop the technology that allowed that to happen. No, blind people absolutely can be involved in science and participate today in so many different areas. There are some people who are being very successful in the scientific community, and more people can do that. So if you have any interest in science, if you are a student, you ought to pursue it. Don't ever let anyone tell you that blindness is going to prevent you from doing so. If you are someone who is asked by another blind person. Gee, can blind people really do that? Your immediate answer should be yes. Whether you know all the details or not, your immediate answer should be yes. If you need more information, you can get it from the National Center. Or as I said, contact me at mike@michaelhingson.com. And again, also go to independentscience.com. Independent Science is just releasing something new. It's an accessible periodic table of all the elements where you can actually go in and not only read all information about each element, like its atomic weight, its atomic number, and a bunch of other stuff, but it's in a form that makes it extremely accessible. The Talking Lab Quest is available, and if it is not available through local schools or through the Department of Rehabilitation in Connecticut, I want to talk to somebody about addressing that. And I would like to do that sooner than later, because there's no reason that these products cannot be made available for blind students to be able to allow us and allow them specifically to access science. So why does butter get hard when it gets put in the refrigerator? Good scientific explanation. First of all, it gets hard because there's a lot of fat in it, and fat gets more solid when it gets colder. Why does it get more solid? Because the molecules slow down. That's a real simple answer. Why did the water drop in temperature when I put the airborne tablets in the water? It's due to something called an endothermic reaction. Now we're getting real technical, right? An endothermic reaction basically is taking energy out of the water in order to dissolve the pills. And when you take energy out of something, it makes it colder. The molecules slow down and all the things that I talked about just a second ago. And the airborne tablets dissolve. The water is a little bit cooler, and you have something you can drink that hopefully might help with the cold. There's a lot of science involved in those things. There's a lot of science involved in everything we do. So here's one for you. Light is electromagnetic radiation. Don't worry about what that is right now, but probably you know. Radio waves like AM and FM radio also consists of electromagnetic radiation. Why is it that our eyes can't see the radiation that radio waves are composed of and only can see light? So why can't I watch or listen to my sports games or music with my eyes, since it's all electromagnetic radiation? I'll leave that one for you to look up. But I'd like to go ahead and stop and see if anyone has any questions. And again, if you'd like to chat later, we can do that. But if you have any questions, would love to take them.
Also now unmuted.
Mike, this is Art Cohen from Delaware. I really enjoyed your book. The magnetic box that you just talked about, is the speech really clear on that? I'd love to hear it one day and see how it sounds.
Yeah, and I just didn't have a chance to set it up, and I knew that the presentation was kind of short. It's pretty clear. The speech isn't as good as I would like just coming out of the box, so it has Bluetooth capabilities, and I connect it to a Bluetooth speaker, which really does make it sound very clear.
I enjoyed science when I was in school, too, because we did, like, simple experiments, like with a balloon, you would put it on a bottle and like put water in it or something, and it would like go up.
Sure. Simple. Well, if you'd like to hear the voice, if anybody would email me and we'll set up a Zoom meeting and I'll do my experiment with airborne and we can try to do some other things.
Why not?
Well, just have some fun with it.
Gladly email me. It's mike@michaelhingson.com.
Correct. mike@michaelhingson.com.
I have to put it in. I have to put it in as Michael first, then Mike.
@michaelhingson, right. Next question. Don't be shy.
Hi, Michael. This is Carol King Reeves. Can you hear me?
I can. I do.
Yes.
Now tell me scientifically why. No, go ahead.
Why you can hear me?
Exactly. It's like, why is the sky blue? But go ahead.
There's a reason why, but I was just, number one, we did read your book as a book club, our book club for NFB Northern Chapter, or actually our affiliate. We're at Thunderdog last month, and it was very, it was just very informative, and I'm so glad, and I've been recommending it to people. So thank you for that, as well as this presentation. And my question to you is, that what's the price point for this piece of equipment for the school system, and how can we promote it even further for Delaware students?
Well, several things. I don't know exactly what the final price points are for schools and other things. I know what the list price of it is, but don't let that scare you. It's not as expensive as a Braille note. It's $2,295 and it comes with several probes. But okay. Again, pricing like that also gets worked out with the school districts and so on. I'm not directly in sales, but I'm helping the sales folks. So anyone who would like to explore it further, I am glad to help with that. But, you know, given the amount of money that schools spend on any number of different kinds of things, this is all about reasonable accommodations and making things accessible. So,
yes.
Yeah, absolutely, it makes sense to do.
Yes, I agree. I thought it was going to be higher than that. So,
well, if you want to pay more,
no,
I mean, I'll
no,
take
Michael,
the extra. It's okay. No, it's $22.95 list.
Okay.
And then there are a bunch of different kinds of probes that go anywhere from maybe $40 or $50 up to a few thousand dollars if you want the probe that will allow you to build a bridge on top of it and design the structural analysis of it. But that's a different story. Most of us don't do bridges.
Wow. Thank you.
Thank you. Who else?
Gary Wunder.
Speaking of a scientific experiment. Yes, sir.
Yeah, that's
how are you?
A modern day Frankenstein, no doubt.
No, that's Frankenstein.
Oh, yes. I just wanted to say thank you. You took a path that I took partially. You were much less intimidated by the words of the rehabilitation professionals and the educators than was I. I went into electronics technology and thought that I was breaking ground, but in reality, you've done it much more. And the great thing for me is that not only have you done it, but you care enough about blind people to stay involved and to give your love and your energy to what we do. And I just want to say thank you.
Well, thank you. And, you know, I got to tell you that I feel really blessed, one, to be able to do the things that you're talking about. But, you know, in reality, here's another part of my story. When I got my first guide dog, Squire, one of the people who got his guide dog, and I think it was his first also, at the same time was a gentleman named Howard Mackey. He was a diabetic, and he, I think, became blind because of that. When I went to college, it turns out my rehabilitation counselor was Howard Mackey. And I said I wanted to go into physics, and he didn't oppose it at all, which was really cool. So I was blessed that I didn't have to fight that fight with him. I had to fight other fights along the way. And when he was no longer my counselor, I had to deal with some challenges. But, you know, I also had a physics advisor. My physics advisor at UC Irvine was the dean of the School of Physical Sciences. So he was the dean of physics, chemistry, and math. His name was Frederick Rhinus. Dr. Rhinus discovered the neutrino. And he made it very clear to me himself that he didn't think that blindness had anything to do with being able to do science or not, which was cool. He had an open mind. And again, I think that I was blessed by encountering some of the right people, but they taught me, and I'm very honored and blessed to be able to continue to pass some of those attitudes back on. So, Gary, thank you. Anyone else who wants to ask anything? I know it's just noon and we have to stop, but I'll be glad if anyone wants to ask anything else, if we have time, Kat. But again, mike@michaelhingson.com. I will respond to emails. And as I said, if a bunch of people want to hear the lab question and virtually play around with a little bit more, love to set up a Zoom meeting. I've got a Zoom room and we can put 100 of us in there and we can do experiments and so on.
Hello, Michael. This is Khalil.
Hi, Khalil. How are you?
Not too bad, sir. Great presentation.
Thank you.
How can, or where would I look to have science or physics or both to help me in a few innovative ideas that I've had in the past few months?
In terms of what? I'm not quite sure what you're asking.
I had an idea to three different ideas to modify an existing product. One was a massage table. One was another one was utensils, and another one was a laundry bag.
Well, let me make a couple of, yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead.
One of the things I suggest you do is reach out to the National Center and find out who, although I don't think one's been appointed yet for next year, the chair of the Science and Technology Committee is, the Research and Technology and Evaluation Committee is, for the National Federation of the Blind. That would be one way to go. Gary Wunder can certainly also connect you with some other people in the Federation who might be very interested in exploring developments of products. But the National Federation of the Blind, if you've got ideas and whether somebody will adopt them or explore with you them depends on how good your ideas are and so on. But if you're going to promote it anywhere where it's going to affect blind people, the best place to start is the National Federation of the Blind, by all means.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Most products today that we use in one way or another are influenced significantly, usually, by the National Federation of the Blind. Our efforts may be invisible, but they're there. And that's because people know the power and the breadth and depth of knowledge of people within the National Federation of the Blind, including the blind scientific community in the Federation. We have an NFB in computer science, and we have a number of different kinds of science type folks and small organizations, if you will, within the Federation. So by all means, reach out to the Federation.
I greatly appreciate that. Thank you.
Sure. Anything else? Well, either everybody went to sleep due to non-24 or we finished our questions, I guess.
Michael, this is Carol. We did have an outstanding question from our book talk, and it was this. You got your guide dog early. Did you ever figure out, I think it was a great and masterful decision they made, but did you ever find out why they made that decision to give you your guide dog earlier than most?
Well, of course, that's changed, and younger people are getting them now. But I think I didn't participate in doing the application. My parents did. But I think that it was because we had some good recommendations from strong guide dog users, and they decided that I could handle the responsibility. I was very mobile around my local neighborhood and going to school and so on. And I think that they decided that I'd probably be able to handle getting a guide dog. Certainly from my standpoint, it's worked out really well. And now I'm on my eighth guide dog. It's been 56 and a half years since I got my first dog. Oh gosh, I'm giving away my age. But the fact is that I think it was a good decision. And by the way, anyone who's having a book club meeting on any, although I know you all discussed it, I'm perfectly happy to come on and meet with book clubs and talk about it and so on. And I really do appreciate you promoting the book. Being, as I love to say, a poor starving author, we appreciate people buying the book, and the audio copy is available. I know it's on Bard, but we love people buying books. So go to Audible and you can get it, or you can buy an audio copy from Barnes & Noble or any other place like that.
Michael, this is Khalil again. I want to say I read the book, and it was very outstanding, and a book of triumph and survival and success. And I'm glad you made it out safely.
Thank you.
Welcome, and Roselle too. One thing I had to listen to a few times in the book when you said that you were riding a bike. I didn't believe it, so I had to rewind it and listen to it again a few times. Like, did I hear that right? So
go try it.
I don't know, sir. I don't know about that one.
I know a number of people who are bike riders. Absolutely, go do it. Okay. Hey, Eric Weinmeier climbed Mount Everest. Come on.
Hey, dude.
Audio now unmuted.
There was a book on that too, Michael. Yeah. I read that book too. But yeah, when I was a little boy, I used to ride a bike too.
Wow. That's amazing.
Thank you.
We can do a lot, Michael.
We can do whatever we choose to do. Absolutely. It's as simple as that.
Exactly. Yeah, we'd love to have you talk at our book club. Everybody would love to hear you. Such a nice
well,
book.
Kat, this is, well, Kat, I don't want to screw up. Oh, go ahead.
The narrator who read the book was really good.
Yeah. Well, Kat, I don't want to mess up your agenda too much.
They muted me.
Uh-oh.
Do we have any last minute questions before our next presenter?
I have one.
Okay, Verita.
Oh, you can hear me.
Yes.
We hear you.
Okay. When I read the book, I was thinking that I wanted to ask you, when you said you took people to Germany to was it to see the Passion Play?
Well, Karen did that. We weren't married at the time, so my wife did that, who's in a wheelchair, by the way.
Oh, okay. Okay. Was it to see the play?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I've not ever seen it. I would love to, but we're not doing that in the next little while.
Nope. I saw it. I think it was in 2000. It was wonderful.
I've heard.
Yes. Very nice.
Well, thank you all again. Remember www.independencescience.com. You can email me mike@michaelhingson.com or go to my website www.michaelhingson.com. And there's a lot of scientific information and a lot of information about things you can do to become more involved in science on the website www.nfb.org. Lots of stuff there. So be sure you don't close your mind to doing it. And Khalil, go ride that bike. Thanks, Kat.
Okay. All right. You're welcome. I'll take that. Thank you.
Is our 310 to 340 presenter in the room?
That would be Rachel. And yes, I am.
Okay. Rachel, how do you pronounce your last name?
Kuntz.
Okay. Jaws was...
I know. It's okay. I'm married into it, so I'm fine. I know.
I didn't want to mispronounce it. So she is the research developer for Blind Ink, and she's going to talk to us about specifically, I wanted to tailor the presentation about the programs that Blind Ink has to offer. And, you know, because we have a diverse group. And we have participants that in the audience that serve people of all ages. So without further ado, Rachel, take it away.
Hi. Well, thank you, Kat, for allowing me to come to Delaware. This is exciting. It's kind of fun when you're in one place and you can be in another place super easily. It's really, really kind of exciting. My name is Rachel Kuntz, and I do know Jaws has some terrible pronunciation, but, you know, what are you going to do? Can't help it. I am the resource development coordinator at Blind Ink, and that is just a fancy title for fundraising and grant writing, and it's a new position here at Blind Ink, so it's something I just have gotten into since about a week before COVID, so I've got no pressure on my shoulders about raising the money that we need to keep our center running, and so I'm not worried at all. We're going to get through this, right? I'm also a graduate of Blind Ink. I graduated from here in 2017. So just so you guys know, Blind Ink is located in Minneapolis, and we are one of three very wonderful and phenomenal training centers. You guys know, probably many of you have heard of our other ones, Louisiana Center for the Blind and the Colorado Center for the Blind. They are in Colorado, of course, and down in a little town there in Louisiana. And Blind Ink is here in Minneapolis. And what we do as a National Federation of Blind Training Center is what I like to describe as putting our philosophy into action. And for me, that means taking the things that Michael was just saying about, you know, just trying to get out there and live our lives the way we want to and push through those barriers that people like to put in front of us. And we, you know, turn them into obstacles instead of barriers, and keep things moving. And today I'm going to talk to you guys about really what makes an NFB training center special. And this applies to all three. So, but I'll mention a little bit of things that, you know, Minneapolis does specifically, but because that's where I'm at, that's where I'm working. But all three centers are roughly the same. You know, we all have this, we shared values as far as our non-visual training approach, which is, you know, the use of the blindfolds and our commitment to using the long white cane and a steadfast, you know, complete observance of making sure Braille is part of every thing that we do. So all three of those things are very consistent. All of our training centers provide what I like, well, let me just backtrack. I like to think of what makes our graduates special by saying that while they're here, they sort of make a pie. It's their own personal pie. And the three things that really go into it are training, and that's good, really valuable training, and it's confidence. And then the third thing, and almost equally important, is a positive attitude about blindness. So I'm going to talk about training first because it's the nuts and bolts of everything. But for training, you're going to get Braille. You're going to get all sorts of technology training, including, you know, all types of things like phones to MacBooks to Windows. You know, most offices are still using Windows-based products. But it's important to be as diverse as possible because you never know what your office is going to have. A lot of places have specialized software. So you want to be able to be as diverse as possible when you're talking about being prepared for that work environment. So we stretch and do all those things. And then in the home areas, we're looking at cooking from using a gas oven all the way up to using a grill or an Instapot, practice on all of those things. For travel, that's what we call our class where you learn to use the white cane. You're going to go, well, here in Minneapolis, we have access to light rail and bus and just, you know, it's sidewalk everywhere. So there's no issues with, you know, having to off-road it or anything like that around here. But you're going to learn all types of crossings. So that makes you incredibly marketable for the future when, you know, you're looking at job opportunities. Right now with the job market, you know, being as flexible as possible and being prepared to be as flexible as possible means that you really need to stretch yourself as far as learning all different types of routes and transit options so that you can be ready to go. So like, for example, I'm capable, I think, of moving to really any kind of environment at this point as far as cities is concerned. I have a personal preference for being in a city, but, you know, I don't feel that if I had a job opportunity in a small town somewhere that I wouldn't be capable of doing that because I feel like I got a pretty broad cross-section of training approach, so I'm going to be ready to go. Then we also have fitness here, and we focus on that as far as, you know, teaching people how to do some things and work on spatial awareness and stuff like that within fitness. One of the exciting things that I listened to the other day, I'm in my office and I'm hearing this like really loud noises coming from the ballroom area because we're in this big mansion here in Minneapolis, and the ballroom for the Pillsbury Mansion is where we do our fitness, and I'm hearing this banging sound, and I go out and there's a student learning how to break a board with a karate kick. Now, not all the students participate in something like that, but this was sort of a fun little goal that he had for himself. And so I kind of observed and listened to him working at trying to figure out, you know, how high he had to raise his leg, and he's a pretty tall guy. So, you know, just getting his posture right and stuff like that. So that was kind of fun. And then we have, of course, employment specialists here. So they're working on all different parts of that as far as, you know, connecting with some network, to understand, you know, what career field you're wanting to go into. To, you know, one of the things people don't know is Blind Geek actually has a job search filter on our website. So if you're in Minnesota, you can look at different job opportunities that are up in the area here, which is kind of fun. And then being in Minneapolis, we're located by all of these corporations that are here, just hundreds of different major corporations. So we have a lot of connections to getting people opportunities to even intern, to do some mock interviews, all that kind of stuff. And so that's pretty important parts of the pie there. But training without, well, before I get into my other part, I almost forgot. So we have all the centers offer the adult transition to blindness programming. And they all have the youth programmings in the summer, which is really special. So if you're 9 years and up, there are a lot of opportunities to come to a training center in the summertime and get some additional mentoring and experience there and have some fun while you're at it. All the centers do different things because of where they're located at, but here we would challenge you with, gosh, any number of things, because Minnesota is located by all these lakes and a lot of free things to kind of get into all summer long. So they're busy all summer. And then we also have a college readiness portion to our program, which means that you can come here in a variety of different ways, from being at Blind Ink in the summertime between your school year, and then or taking the same approach as the other, 6 to 9 months long programming that you can spend it here. And actually, once you get a little bit of blindness skills under your belt, you could take one class here at the local college and enjoy some in-state tuition and be able to kind of practice out some of the skills that you're learning while you're kind of easing into the college experience, because it is a huge investment that you make in yourself when you go to college. It's a major time commitment. So it's really important for some people to really make sure that they've got all of those note-taking skills down and are able to really navigate all the different layers of college. So in our college readiness program, that's what they focus on. And that's always exciting. But in the other piece to all of these things, because you're in Delaware, is that the residential side of stuff is pretty exciting here too. Here at Blind Ink, our residential apartments are located right off of the campus of the University of Minnesota. So you would be right here in the heart of all the things going on there at the college campus. So that's another good approach for people to get kind of connected with things. And in case you're wondering, all of the apartments have free internet, because that's always on my mind whenever I travel. And we have all the furnishings and all the good stuff in there. So if you were interested in being a student here, you would come to our center and get training here. And you would just need to bring your personal stuff with you, get off the plane with your humongous suitcase like I did, and just get settled in and get to work building up your life and getting things going together. So those are the major programmings that are most relevant here. But the two things that I think matter so much, almost in some ways, almost more. Training is typically done, route based in other environments. Like what I had prior to coming to Blind Ink is, somebody shows you from point A to point B. But what about if a sidewalk's closed? What if that bus doesn't run, got delayed and isn't running right? What if your boss changes something else in your day and you got to figure out how to work around that? Well, what Blind Ink and all the training centers do, or our training centers, is we're focused on every single day from 8 to 4:30 in the afternoon. It's like a full-time job. You're working in every single class to build up your confidence and your problem-solving skills, and really focusing in on paying attention to the blindness skills that you're learning. So for confidence, you're going to take part in a lot of challenge activities as your skills progress. You're going to get to do some fun stuff like going apple picking, to tree cutting, to dog sledding, any number of variety of things. But within your classes themselves, you'll get an opportunity to do things like let's say with COVID, all the COVID circumstances, but you would have experiences like, for example, you might get the experience of making a meal for 40 people. Now, I like to use this example because with making a multi-course meal for 40 people, there aren't many people ever that have to plan out and prepare that much food in multiple courses, in beverages and appetizers and desserts from scratch or otherwise in this world. So when you're sitting in front of that employer and they're asking you questions, because in their minds, which they're not going to say because they're smart people, they're not going to say, I don't know how this blind person is going to do the job. But you'll know in your mind, I've got this cool story to share. When they ask me questions like, what makes you capable of what makes you unique, or what makes you special, or, whatever, any number of personality questions they love to ask to get at some mundane story. But you're going to be able to say, hey, I actually coordinated a meal for 40 people, prepared it from scratch, got it out on time. This happened, but I was able to overcome it by solving it that way. And that is a story that is going to blow their minds. So you'll have things like that in your back pocket because the world is going to try to take away your confidence all the time. It's going to try to chip away at it, but you're going to have that armor built up from all the little experiences you'll do every day at a training center and at Blind Ink if you got the opportunity to go. And the last piece that I think matters very significantly is to make sure that your attitude about blindness is a positive one. Not sure what you have experienced in your lives, but I know that my attitude about blindness before coming to the NFB probably wasn't the most positive, and I didn't even realize it wasn't that positive. You know, when I would cop out of things, or I would choose to like defer to some sighted person for their experience, I would recognize later when finding the NFB that I didn't realize my attitude was so negative. But what you do when you come to a training center is that you're going to be taking part in seminar discussions, and you're going to be awakening yourself to understanding what are the low expectations that you even put inside your own mind that you didn't even realize you did. And you're going to be doing these things all the time. And you're going to be working too with people who are also blind. Most of the employees here at Blind Ink, and this is true of both all three training centers, most of them are blind. The presidents, the executive director is blind. Our entire board is blind. And then the very few sighted people who have, they're blind at heart. So they're, you know, experts in the field, and we live the lives that we profess to people to try to do. And, you know, we want you to find a way to build your future with the new expectations that you get from developing a positive attitude about blindness. And that's one of the most special things, I think, about the beginning of a student's training. And then at the end, when they come in the door and they think one thing about their abilities as a blind person, but when they leave, their minds are just so reshaped. It's almost, we almost make them in as sort of tigers, you know, they want to get out there and just, you know, get at everything, you know, get busy working on stuff. I think it's pretty exciting. And oh, I forgot one thing, because Michael made me think about this. The STEM programming here at Blind Ink, we're building that up. We hired a new employee back in the beginning of the year named Caden Colton. And Caden is working towards building up our STEM curriculum here. And so we have an instructor that's able to work with people on MS Code. So if you're people that are interested in a science field or even want to just explore it, this would be a great place to do it. So don't forget to, you know, think about that. And my question to you guys is, if you knew that taking 9 months for training would forever change your life for the better, would you take it? And while you're thinking about that answer, my answer was yes. And it was a tough one because I had a son at home. And but when I made that commitment and I spent those months for myself, it made everything about my ability to be a mom so much better. And I hope you guys will think about exploring those options for yourself because it's never too late. So I'll take questions if I have time. Kat, do I have time to take any questions?
Rachel, Mike Hingson.
Hi, Mike.
Hey. Question for you. I have heard, and I can't remember where, whether it was Diane McGeorge or Julie Deedon or someone, that anecdotally, although not absolutely scientifically proven, but that there is a much higher rate of people who get jobs if they have gone through our centers than from other rehabilitation centers. Do you have any knowledge or thoughts about that?
Well, I would say that it's 100% true for us. Our data, which we talk about all the time with people and I've neglected to mention, is that we have an 85% success rate. So 85% of our graduates either go on to get a competitive job or they go to college and then later get a job. So, you know, I mean, you cannot, there is nobody else that can talk about kind of data like that. It's just, and I really believe that it's because of our philosophy and the confidence portion, because, you know, Kenneth Jernigan, when he did his Nature of Independence speech, he talked about, you know, just having training, just the knowledge of Braille alone is not what sets you free as a person. It's the other components. It's the mental blocks that you have in your mind. These are my words, not his at this point, but it's that confidence piece. And it's that attitude about blindness that really make the difference as far as your ability to navigate all the obstacles that get thrown in your way. So thank you. That was a good question.
Thank you.
It's like I paid you or something to do that for me. So but thank
checks
you.
In the mail, right?
That's right. Funnily, I want to mention that I did, I was working on a grant this morning, and one of the things that I included in there is our focus on STEM. So we, we get the grant, it'll be because they believe in the ability of blind people to do science, technology, and math. So I'm excited. Any other questions?
Audio now unmuted.
Yes, Rachel, this is Art Cohen here from Delaware. You talk about taking a training for 6 months and you took advantage of it. I did, because several years ago in 1984, I took a 2-week computer class down at an Easter Seals camp that opened the door today that I have my job working with the state. And the Division for the Visually Impaired said to me, would you be willing to go out of state for 6 months? And I absolutely said yes.
That's right. Good for you. Good for you.
Now, what's the contact information to look into this again?
I'm sorry, can you repeat your question?
What's the contact information to find out more about the programs and what can be offered?
That is a great question. I'm really dropping this today. I apologize. So we are Blind Incorporated. So here's a few options. Our website is a great place to go for some information. If you're not really ready to talk to anybody, but you want to kind of peruse things and just get a little details, background information, we got a lot of good content out there. It's blindinc.org. So blindinc.org. And then we do still take phone calls. I know some places don't, they're trying to get you to use all email access and everything. But our phone number is 612-872-0100. And then if you're ready to really have a conversation with somebody, when you dial that number, you can ask to speak with our admissions coordinator, and her name is Jennifer Wenzel. She's been in the NFB forever and is super knowledgeable about all the ins and outs about how it works to come from Delaware to Minnesota and from any state, really, because she's just been doing this for so long that she really has a good, sorry, I have an alarm going off for some reason. Okay, so, and then we have email too, which goes directly to her, and that is info at blindinc.org. So super easy. Kat, I'm more than happy to talk with anybody. You can share out my information later to your listserv. I put all of my contact information in my signature line. So feel free to share that out with people. We always welcome conversations, and we don't get upset if we get a lot of people who are just exploring their options. So if you're just looking for additional information, feel free to call. We just love talking to people. This is a huge investment that a person makes in themselves, and it's no easy decision. And we believe in the power and abilities of blind people. And so we're just ready to be part of that journey with you if you're looking at that. But it takes a little while usually for people to start. Once I realized that the NFB Training Center even existed, it took me several months to make that possible for me to even do it in my own life. So, it's a big investment in yourself, and you're worth it. So call us.
I have a question for you.
Go ahead.
This is Verita Turner. Can you check yourself in, or do you have to get a referral from a state agency?
That's a great question. So the process by which most people come to training centers are to go through your state agency first. And that doesn't mean you can't have a conversation with us to figure out how that all works, but you would want to go through them to, create your case and do your individual plan for employment and get all that stuff set up and ready to go, because they'll be the resource for funding the training and your stay at Minneapolis. Now, I will say that we do have people that work out or negotiate coming individually and paying for it themselves. But it is a pretty big investment. So if you're capable of doing that, feel free. But usually people, 95% of people are using their rehab agencies to do out-of-state training. And you are, legally speaking, entitled to that because of how the rehab system works. You're entitled to the training of your choice. But every state has their own little hoops that you have to go through in order to get that done. So, and you got great advocates there in Delaware. So should you encounter any problems with getting the training that you choose or want, you can always reach out and go in as a team. And, you know, you have the right to all that. You have the right to get training that works for you. So
thank you.
Great question. Thank you.
Hello.
Hello.
This is Robert Patty. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, Robert.
I have a question. I'm a veteran. Do y'all have any other stipulations for veterans?
Can you tell me more about what you mean by that? And thank you for your service. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. I know the veteran, the VA have rehabilitation schools for the blind. I was wondering if, speaking in transportation wise.
Well, you know, I am not sure how that system or that setup works. I'm familiar with the VA system for training options for people. But to be honest with you, that would be a better question for the for our admissions coordinator. She might know some more details. And as far as, I'm not sure there's a lot of feedback going on. I don't know if somebody could hit mute or just check to see if they're doing that. I know how Zoom is. It gets quirky sometimes. Let me just say one little thing about transportation. When you're coming from out of state, typically what happens is some portions of your travel can be funded by your rehab agency, but usually not everything. So if you're one that likes to go back home every month or so, that may be something you factor into your expenses. But I do know that certain portions of travel are often covered, and that's part of what you can talk about with your counselor as far as setting up how things are going to work financially for you. So, Robert, if you're interested in more information about that, I can, I don't need to get your information here, but if you're willing to email or call Jennifer Winsel, she'd be happy to talk you through a little bit more about that, or at least find out more information for you.
Okay. And that information is info@blindinc.org.
So BLINDINC.ORG. So info@blindinc.org.
Okay, thank you for that information.
Yeah, thank you. Do you know Mark Erickson? You're in Minnesota. He's Navy. He's involved in the national affiliate or national division for the veterans.
No, I don't have nothing against the Navy. Go Army.
Yes.
Thanks again.
So funny. Thank you, Robert. So, well, you know what? I hope whatever you guys decide to do in your futures is successful. I know that if you came to Blind Inc. or you went to either of our other two training centers, you're going to experience things you never thought possible about yourself. And I encourage you to kind of keep exploring, look into it.
And, excuse me.
Hey.
Sorry. My name's Shannon. You were talking earlier about doing like cane training and stuff like that. What if you have a guide dog?
So we focus on the cane. It doesn't mean that if you have a guide dog, you wouldn't just bring them with. What happens typically is, this is different for every student, but while you're at the center and you're doing your training, it's focusing on the use of the cane. We've had multiple students that come with guide dogs, and the guide dog is used when they're not in the training day. So from 8 to 4:30, for example, you would not be going out on travel with your dog or anything like that. But after school and before school and on the weekends, the guide dog's perfectly fine. It's wonderful.
Okay.
I love when the guide dogs are here. We don't have any guide dogs right now, but I love when they're here. And
I've had mine just about a year.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. One day I might look into it, but I really like the cane because of the fact that I'm kind of a nosy person and I love knowing what's in my environment. So my cane just like, you know, every time it hits something, I just put that in my mental map about, you know, oh, that's a hydrant or, you know, know, whatever. So that would be something, the trade-off for having a guide dog that I'm not sure I'm ready to commit to yet. But I love them. They're wonderful.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for the question. That was a good question. So one thing I didn't mention was COVID-19 stuff. And if I have 1 second, 1 minute, more minute, I'll mention this. For COVID-19, we are training in person now. In the very beginning of COVID-19, we were not. We did all remote. Should our conditions worsen or time gets, you know, where we need to be sheltering in place again, we have the option of just going full remote from within our residential program. And so what we're doing in person is that we are all wearing the face masks, and staff, students, and everything. We have designated zones that we're allowed to take the masks off. And we're having smaller than our normal class sizes, which are pretty small anyway, but we're really limiting that so that we can make sure that we can keep that 6 foot distance or more, really. And we've all stayed very healthy, which is great. And we're all very careful. Always, you know, my hands are so dry right now. I probably, you guys are too, from all the hand sanitizer and the hand washing that's going on. But it's important that we do that, because COVID-19 is not a joke. So, but yeah, so we are teaching in person now. So if you were to participate in Blind Ink, you would be coming to Minneapolis to participate, and, which is a lot of fun. So anyway, so if there aren't any more questions, I can turn it back over to Kat. And
I had a quick question.
Go ahead, Carol.
Is there an age limit, like upper age limit, to participating in Blind Ink? And the other question I had is, Minnesota in the winter, question mark?
Now listen here, let me tell you, if you were to take part in training here in Minneapolis, you would be prepared to work in any environment whatsoever. You have all four seasons here. We have gorgeous summers, our beautiful falls, and our lovely spring. And yes, winter can be tricky, but at least if you throw on enough clothing, you're going to be fine. You know, I if it gets to be 50 below, we don't go out either. We're not crazy. But I didn't have any trouble with it, to be honest. But you'll be prepared for anything, so you won't be limited. So if you got a job opportunity in Boston, let's say you're exploring a lot of options and you want to do this specific thing that only seems to be available in Alaska, you'd be able to go there. Hopefully not, but if you did. Minneapolis too is so, they're just so used to the snow that I tell you, it'll come down and within a few hours, sidewalks are already getting cleared out. Streets are already cleared. I mean, it just does not slow down here. So it's pretty exciting. And then to answer your question about the age, there is no limit. If you're interested in looking for work and your goal is you have a career objective, you're planning to go back to work there, you could be 75, you could be 89, you could be 18. As long as you're legally able to work, you are able to come to our training center and take part in a residential program. So we have age ranges that just vary all over the place. And then it sort of changes. Like sometimes we have more 20-year-olds, and then sometimes we have more people in their 40s, because we have a rolling admission. So you just come whenever there's a space available and you get started in classes that people have already been working through things same time, which is also good because you get the expertise of somebody who's been there a few months, so they can help you kind of guide you along. But there's no age limit. The limit to that would be in your own mind. So, you know, if you're ready and wanting to take on some new thing, come see us. Or even if you're at a job right now where your vision has gotten so much bad that you think you could benefit from some training and that would help you get back to that. You could be doing a job save situation and take a few, you know, 2-3 months leave of absence and work on some things to help you build your skills up so that you can keep that job. That's another approach.
Excellent.
Yeah, thank you. Good question, Carol.
This is Marita.
Hey there. Welcome.
Hi. I have a couple of things. Don't knock Alaska. It's a beautiful place to live.
Oh yes, thank you. Good point.
Yep. I live there, so I know.
Yeah.
And the other thing, your thing is your time to stay. Do you have a time limit?
No, and actually, the average they say, they give a range, usually say 6 to 9 months to complete the adult program, the adult transition of Linus program. But some students need longer than that. And so it's really individualized. Some students can, like I said, if you have some skills already and you just want to kind of hone them in, you may only need a few months. So but we say 9 months just so that people have an idea of what kind of commitment it is.
Okay.
It's really individualized. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. So when you say you take like their skills into consideration and they might not have to go through the whole thing. So if you have knowledge like of cooking, do they just move you on to something else or test you and move you on?
That's a good question. To answer that, I will say that within the class, you're going to start off at a certain point. And really the first month that you spend at a training center, you're going to be going through a lot of different skill areas and you're going to be getting assessed. And you move out of certain things based on you reaching benchmarks. So which means that if you hit certain goals like non-visual cooking, for example, you might do that faster if you have cooking experience, but maybe you've never done it under blindfolds. And so it might change your ability, change your speed or change your understanding of how you know how to do the cooking. But you might be a lot quicker than somebody else who has never cooked a day in their lives, which, you know, there's a lot of young people that come who've never cooked. And so they got to learn also how to cook, you know, how to prepare, like read recipes.
Yeah.
But there's a whole lot to cooking that's not just the process of cooking. So in home management, for example, if you're going to do a small meal or something like that, you need to know how to get to the store under blindfolds too, which gets into a little more like, this depends on your own personal abilities. So if this is not a goal of yours when you come here, you'll just to get to ignore that. But I'm giving you a kind of a sample of what a person might do. So they'll go to the shopping, do that on their own, and then come back, you know, make sure that they know how to put their food away in order to find it the next day so nobody else uses it in a recipe on accident. you're going to need to prepare your menus and your work plan, which is what we call it, for your step-by-step, like I'm going to do the potatoes first and it's going to take me 2 hours, blah, blah, blah. So you have to make a plan. And that's done in Braille for a lot of students. So it's kind of like it's all going to work together, if that makes any sense. So it's a layered cake that has to have all the components before you can get through a class. But, you know, if you've got a lot of cooking experience, it usually typically takes a less time than somebody who hasn't. So
okay, that leads me into, so if you don't do Braille, then you're kind of doomed.
That would be a philosophy question.
Okay.
Usually what happens with Braille is that we try all different avenues of seeing ways in which you might be able to do it that you didn't know were a possibility. So when you go to a training center, you're going to get access to a lot of different ways Braille is made. We have Codemasters here, which helps people learn how to write and read the code. Well, you focus on learning to write it and recognizing the code first. And people can do that in under 6 weeks. So there's a lot of different approaches to it. You got the Braille displays that you could practice on to see if that works better for people, like, for example, if you got neuropathy. There's jumbo Braille. If everything else fails, maybe jumbo Braille is an option. Some people just explore a lot of different ways of using it, because really in just heart to heart with you, if you're not reading, well, Braille is our only form of literacy as a blind person, really. It's our only form. So we want to search for all different ways for you to be able to use it, even if it's not to read a novel, that you might be able to learn it just for functional purposes in your house, or so that you can get out of an elevator if you're traveling somewhere, you know,
yeah,
or find your room. So, you know, I don't know if you've had a convention experience yet, but
I did that
once. I went traveling and realized I couldn't get out of the elevator. So that's what brought me to figuring out what am I going to do for myself. So So yeah. Oh. Yeah. There you go.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, Kat, I know I've taken way more time than I'm supposed
to.
No,
you're absolutely fine. And guys, I have Rachel's information, so I can pass it along for those that have questions, you know, when she's not available to answer them here. So feel free to, you know, let me know and I can get you her number, her, you know, to, for those that don't do email. So, okay. And before we adjourn for the banquet, because we have some time before the banquet, but I realize we have a lot of door prizes. And I know those that have door prizes in their possession, they don't want to hold on to them. They'd rather give them away. So instead of doing one door prize, I'm feeling kind of door prize happy at the moment.
Amen.
So I'm thinking of giving away not one, not two, but 5 door prizes.
Amen.
So can I have my door prize helpers, Sylvia, George, and Milton, help me with this endeavor, please?
Okay. And I request permission, Kat. Everyone's had such great questions and we've been being with our speakers. I had planned to give away 2 door prizes per.
Okay. Speaker. So you can just add 3 more to that.
So yeah, I'm going to add like a bunch more. We're going to have a door prize fiesta.
Yeah, something.
There you go.
First one, we're going to give away a $20 Panera gift card donated by Nancy Smith. And let's see a random
gallery. Hopefully I don't get it.
Well, you can always decline it and put it back in. Which is what George did when he got one. Okay, Milton, are you there to generate a number for us?
Call my name. Say my name.
Let's see if he's here. Let's see.
I thought he was.
Here he comes. Oh, he's muting himself. Milton, you just mute yourself.
Okay, Milton, we're about to do about 8 door prizes, so your random generator is going to be really busy. Can you generate for us?
He's muted, I think.
Oh, I thought we unmute. Is he muted still?
No, now he's unmuted.
Good.
Okay.
Sylvia?
Yes.
This is Carol. I can generate random numbers on my phone if you want.
Okay, well, Milton, are you there? Do we want to ask Carol to do it?
That's fine.
Is he muted? Is he
no, muted? He's unmuted.
Okay, Carol, how about generating a number?
The first number is 35.
Okay, 35. And 35 is, 35 is me. I'm going to decline this time. So let's generate another number.
Okay, the second number is 16.
Okay, 16. And that is Katrina Gosine.
Woohoo!
Hey. Is she in the house?
I'm here.
Oh, yay. Right. I don't have to mail it to you because you're coming to my house on Tuesday. Yay, that's easy.
Katrina is the winner of the Panera gift card.
Okay. The next number, Sylvia.
Okay, hold on a minute. Let me announce the prize.
Okay.
Guys, that actually worked out for me because my anniversary is coming up.
Ooh, sweet.
You're welcome.
Okay, the next door prize is going to be, was donated by Jim Steele, and it is a Staples gift card for $15.
Okay, and that random number is the number 3.
Ooh, the number 3. Hold on. Oops.
Read my
Just a second.
I don't think that person's
here. Hardware glitch.
Generate a random number between 1 and 52.
Okay. It's actually between 1 and 52.
Excuse me?
It's between 1 and 52. We actually
have... That's what I said.
Oh, okay. My fault. Okay. Number 3 is Derek Alexander. Is Derek Alexander in the room?
What's that? The Airstream beans in the turkey too?
And is there a Derek Alexander? I don't think there is a Derek Alexander.
Generate a number.
Okay, we're gonna have to get another number.
52 is the next one.
Okay, 52. Gary Wonder.
Woo, yay!
Gary wins the gift card.
Did I win?
Yes, you did.
And what was it?
A $15 Staples gift card.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
Excellent.
Okay. Next one is a we have two Groupon gift cards for $15. That's a $30 value donated by yours truly, Sylvia Reed.
And the number is 5.
Okay, 5. Here we are with 5. Oops. Oh, rats.
Generate a number.
I put in 5 and it didn't search right. So, sorry, guys. I have to go back and make it search right. 5 is Kat Botner. You have just won 2 Groupon cards. Value.
What did I win?
Value $30. 2 Groupon gift certificates, $15 each.
Oh, sweet. I'll have to figure out how to work those things. Thank you.
You're welcome. I have not been, anyway, I will. Next gift, next door prize is going to be chocolates from Southern Chapter. These 6 theater-sized bars and the bag of chocolate-covered pretzels. Who is the lucky stiff who's going to get this?
The number is 43.
Okay.
That already been called before?
Yes, it has.
Amber.
Oh, yeah, it has.
Yes, it has. You're right.
Okay, I'll come up with another number. Generate a random number between 1 and 52. 7.
Okay, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7. Is Shannon Britt.
Yay, Shannon!
Party at Shannon's house.
Woohoo! Thank you.
You're welcome. And how many, need another, Sylvia?
Yes, I do. I need another. The next one is going to be a set of 2 face masks from Northern Chapter.
That would be number 41, Sylvia.
Okay, let's see if we've got 41. Is Tom Spittle? Is he in the room?
I don't think so.
Random number between 1 and 52.
He said he wouldn't be here.
Yes, he did say he would not be here.
No, I'm sorry. He's not here.
The next number is 47 then. Has that been called already?
Let me see. 47. No, Anna Trotman. Anna, are you still here?
See if we can find
a random number between
is she gone?
I think she might be. Speak up, Anna, speak up.
Raise your hand, Anna.
Do you need another number, Sylvia?
Yes, we do. We need another number. Sorry, I thought
27.
All right, 27. 27, Littell McBride. Is she around? Raise your hand, Littell.
Generate a random number between 1 and 52.
I guess she is not.
I don't see her. I don't see her.
All right. Gosh, we had so many people this afternoon.
Well, sorry, we need another number. Can I make a suggestion? Can I make a suggestion? How many prizes have we done?
We've done just now, I think we've done about 3, but we have a lot. We have a few more to do.
Okay, because I was going to say we can put some extra ones in the banquet tonight.
If you think yes, I was going to do that too.
Folks, we did 4.
Do one more? You want to do one more?
Well, we haven't given this one away, so let's do another number for it.
Generate a random number between 1 and 52.
Okay, somebody's like,
number 1 is for the giving the mask.
Okay, Khalil, you are the winner of Northern Chapters, a set of face masks from Northern Chapter.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you. That's what I needed.
He's here. Yeah.
Yeah, he's here.
Generate a random number between 1 and 52.
All right, and we're going to do at least one more. Let's do the... let's do an Amazon gift card donated by Gordon Salter of $25.
That number would be 36. Has that been called already?
Let me see. Yes, it has.
Okay. Generate a random number between 1 and 52. 12.
Okay, 12. Grisel Espinosa, are you here?
Generate a random number between 1 and 50.
No, I guess she isn't.
I don't think so.
Generate a random number between 1 and 52.
It gave me 3, which we did all right.
Yes, we did 3, and 3 is
44.
Okay. 44 is Mildred Taylor. I know we called her in. Are you still here, Mildred? You see Mildred. I don't think she got in. All right, we need another one. We need another number.
Between 1 and 52.
By the way, we only have 25 people in the room.
24.
Okay. Okay, 24, Misty Malone. I don't think I've seen Misty in these at all.
I haven't either.
All right, we need another number.
Why don't we hold off till the banquet? And we have tomorrow, Sylvia. We can double up.
Yeah,
we're going to have something like 15 prizes to give away. So we'll split them between. And everybody's name goes back into the hat at the banquet. And yes. Yes. Tomorrow.
Back in the house.
Yes.
Yeah, everybody's hat.
Oh, we only have one more to go.
Oh, okay. I'll do it.
One more.
Generate a random number between 1 and 52. 37. Did we do that one already?
I think. No, we did not. Gordon Salter, are you in the room?
I don't think he is.
He was? Gordon, raise your hand. I know you know how.
Generate a random number between.
Oh, he's not here. Wow. Everybody went away too fast. There were lots of people here before.
Next number is 22.
Carol.
Ken, do you want me to hold on our financial stats until the banquet, maybe?
Yes. I'll take it. What was
it was wait a minute. Remind me what it was.
You said it was a $25 Amazon.
Amazon gift card from Gordon Salter. So yahoo! Gordon would have gotten his own gift.
So Carol won.
Thank you. Thank you, Verita, for spurring me on.
There you go.
Okay, that's a good stopping
done.
Point.
Okay.
All right.
Good stopping point.
Okay. And we will see you at, oh, about 5:30, 5:45.
Oh, okay.
Oh, wait. Guys, before we adjourn, do we want to go over the numbers that Gary didn't, that remember he wanted to do those numbers that you wanted to reconfigure those pack numbers?
Sure. I can do that really quickly. Your number 46 in pack, you give $1,030 cumulative. That's $115 a month, and you have five wonderful people who give on PAC. I really do want to say thank you for that. It's a generous contribution, and for a small state, I think you're really doing great. Now, the interesting thing is that in the Kenneth Jernigan Fund, you know, that I talked about this morning that helps people get to convention, you're 42. You give $75 a month. But here's the cool thing. If you wanted to beat out some states, if you were able to give, let's say, $26, if you were able to go from $75 to $101, you would beat out Rhode Island, you would beat out Michigan, and you would beat out Hawaii, and you would beat out Alaska. And that would mean that you would be number 38 in the country. Mm. And if you really wanted to get ambitious, you could beat out Tennessee and be 37, but they're at $125. So I give that to you to just think about. And then our last fund is the Sun Fund. It's our savings account for when things go bad. And you are 39 in that. You've got $75 there. And again, what's really cool is if you wanted to beat out, there's a state here, Missouri, and they give $100 a month. And then there's another state called Michigan, and they give $100 a month. And Alaska gives $100 a month. So if you wanted to move into position 36, you could give $101. If you wanted to do position 35, you could bypass Arizona. They're at 35 with $105. Or you got that doggone Tennessee. It's at 34. You could take its place by getting $126. So I leave you with those things to think about. And I apologize profusely for messing it up. It should have been at the end of the national report. But I thank you for listening.
Thank you, Gary.
Thank you.
And I guess if there's nothing to, no comments or questions for Gary, I'm going to, officially adjourn afternoon session for the 6 o'clock banquet. So.
All right.